Thank you, Nick. But what conversation will we be having on Monday? Will we be writing the epitaphs for Keir Starmer's premiership? I've been introduced to a relatively new word this morning, and that word is Stormtrooper. A significant cohort of people, I guess inevitably more active online than probably in the queue for your bus this morning, who will admit no wrong on the case of the current Prime Minister. I'm afraid they are on an incredibly sticky wicket this morning, because this is almost unbelievably bad. And objectively speaking, scarves off, loyalties aside, you did a double take, right, when you saw the first headline that said he failed, Mandelson failed a security vetting process and got sent to Washington anyway.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, Sir Keir Starmer's Chief Secretary, Darren Jones, says the Prime Minister won't resign over the Lord Mandelson vetting row. It's emerged the peer was cleared by the Foreign Office to become US Ambassador, despite failing a security review. Number 10 says Sir Keir was only made aware of the revelation on Tuesday and is furious about it. Darren Jones was asked by LBC's Nick Ferrari earlier why it took so long for Sir Keir and Downing Street to react.
The information had not yet been fully assembled for him to be able to go to the House of Commons to make that statement. As you know, he's going to be giving a statement to the House of Commons on Monday.
Why Monday? A matter of this gravity?
Purely because Parliament is not sitting today, because it's Friday, Nick. If the House was sitting today, the Prime Minister would be there this morning.
Well, surely he could make a statement from number 10 or somewhere else.
I think it's important in these circumstances for the Prime Minister to make an address to the House of Commons.
The top civil servant at the Foreign Office, Sir Ollie Robbins, has now left his post. Opposition parties are calling for the Prime Minister to resign. Liberal Democrat leader Sir Ed Davey has told LBC the buck has to stop with Sir Keir Starmer.
I don't think he can get out of this by sacking Ollie Robbins, but it does seem inconceivable that a senior civil servant like Ollie Robbins, who'd only just been appointed to this job, you know, just a few weeks earlier, that he would take such a decision without referring it to ministers.
Stay with LBC for the very latest. In other news this morning, the UK and France are to chair a meeting in Paris to discuss the future of the Strait of Hormuz. Discussions are expected to focus on how the key waterway can be kept open after the Iran war ends. The US, Iran and Israel won't be involved in discussions. Three people have been charged over a suspected arson attack on a Persian media organisation in northwest London. LBC's reporter Helen Hoddenott has more details.
21-year-old Asheen McGuinness, 19-year-old Nathan Dunn and a 16-year-old boy, who are all British nationals, have been charged with arson with intent to endanger life. Officers say a lit container was thrown at a Persian media organisation on Wednesday evening. The fire put itself out and no injuries were reported.
In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down 19 points at 10,570. The pound buys $1.35 and a euro 14. LBC weather, a band of rain spreading eastwards across much of the UK, the southeast staying dry, a high of 16 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
How would you describe McCain vibes?
I would reckon it's like a crisp and a chip. If they had a baby, do you know what I mean? Well, you know what?
A chip. And a crisp.
Combination.
It's got crisp ancestry, but it's a chip.
Like a hot chip crisp combo thingy? Yeah? Pure poetry, that was.
McCain vibes. Our chip crisp combo hot snack thingies. In a freezer aisle near you.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Three minutes after 10 is the time. I mean, crikey, we ran through some of the greatest hits yesterday, didn't it, when it comes to my well-worn and over-rehearsed anecdotes that I like to use to sometimes highlight rather bigger pictures. What do we go with for today? My old geography teacher or Donald Rumsfeld? Donald Rumsfeld's famous litany, of course, of, I always forget precisely what it was, the known knowns, the known unknowns, the unknown unknowns, and the unknown knowns. And my old geography teacher, who was not, shall we say, the most knowledgeable exponent of geographic art, who used to respond to questions that he couldn't answer by telling us, don't know, nobody knows, don't need to know, it's not in the curriculum. And there is an awful lot that we don't know about the extraordinary, the close to unprecedented revelation reported by the Guardian newspaper yesterday that Peter Mandelson, prior to being sent to Washington, D.C. as the ambassador to the court of Donald Trump, but it would appear after it was announced that he was being appointed to that role, failed a or the vetting process. His security clearance. Pause for a moment just to reflect, and forgive me for this, but on the journalistic, I'd be just scoop of the year, this, isn't it? It's going to take some beating. The Guardian absolutely smacking it out of the park. When you think about the effort that some of their rivals on the right of British politics are putting in to pin anything on the current government, and particularly the current Prime Minister, trying to demonise a donkey sanctuary at one point, then this, by the Guardian, is absolutely extraordinary and brilliant journalism. A massive, massive scoop and a potentially premiership-ending revelation. He was, the decision was overruled by the Foreign Office so that he could take up his role as ambassador to the US. We have a book to be written, don't we, about the damage sustained by the entire Labour Party over a period of about 30 years, if not more, as a direct consequence of trying to find plum jobs for Peter Mandelson. How much damage? Can anyone count it? Is it measurable? The amount of damage sustained by the Labour Party as an absolutely direct consequence of putting Peter Mandelson into plum jobs. Now, there's an argument to be made that the good outweighs the bad, and for a long time it did, but I suspect if we could somehow see those scales, then all of the dark arts of spin and the brilliance, alleged brilliance at communication and media manipulation is probably now, if you were to cite those as positives, they are now rather massively outweighed by the negatives that appointing him to these jobs create. This is absolutely insane, this story. Make no bones about it. The problem I have, and I'm going to level with you briefly, because obviously this is not in any way, shape or form about me, but when you've spent much of the last two decades chronicling the appalling amorality and incompetence of right-wing politicians and calling out the utter hypocrisy of so-called journalists who wear their biases on their sleeve so blatantly and unashamedly that, frankly, you don't know whether they can even lie straight in bed, then on mornings like this, and this will sound odd, actually, I worry sometimes that I might swing too far the other way in order to prove that I'm not a hypocrite like they are. So if, for example, today you think that it's still appropriate to suggest, to lie through your teeth that Boris Johnson lost his job for eating cake, then in order to prove that you're in an entirely different universe to that sort of morally bankrupt liar, then you might end up swinging too far the other way. And I'm just putting that out there because these are the things that I ponder and pontificate before I come on air. But I'm not at the moment worried that I'm overreacting to this story because, well, on a personal level, it was almost the only thing left in Keir Starmer's locker that you thought you could rely on. His commitment to and observance of process. I mean, this may be unfair, but some of the balls that he has dropped can be picked up again. But the two things that I felt he was almost untouchable on would have been commitment to process and international law. He has played an absolute blinder with regard to Donald Trump and Benjamin Netanyahu's hideous adventures in the Middle East. I mean, a truly extraordinary display of probity and integrity in the face of extraordinary abuse and criticism up to and including the President of the United States of America. He has held a steady course and got every big decision right. And so that stays in his locker. Commitment to international law, commitment to the national interest. But commitment to process? The idea when we engaged in muted celebration that 14 years of nation-shredding government appeared to be in retreat, the idea that this would signal a period not of perfection, but of at least an end to the kind of corruption, the perception of corruption, the dishonesty, the perceptions of dishonesty, the ludicrous finagling and reverse ferreting and excusing and explaining, just the simple idea, perhaps in retrospect naive, that we would go back to a system where things were mostly transparent and largely dealt with honestly. So, I think I'll allow myself. I said it's not about me, and of course it's not, but this is my show, and I usually begin with my thoughts and feelings before inviting you to share yours. So, I feel profoundly let down on this particular issue, because it's really hard to see any justification for what has happened. I mean, the obvious question to ask is do you believe him? But that's a pointless question to ask, because we've got absolutely no material to back up our opinions. The question really becomes, does it matter whether he knew or not? Because what you have now is a situation where the Prime Minister is sort of going to argue that it's everybody's fault but his, that a man who failed security vetting got appointed by him to be the ambassador to the United States. If it's not his fault, then whose fault is it? Oh, it's the fault of the person that didn't tell him that Peter Mandelson had failed the security vetting. Oh, it's the fault of the person that told him that he had to prioritize cozying up to Donald Trump above everything else, that appeasement was the order of the day, and that anything could be rubber-stamped or rushed through or squeezed as a direct consequence of the urgency of putting somebody in the embassy in Washington, D.C. that would be able to deal with Donald Trump's depravity. Whose fault is it if it's not Keir Starmer's fault? And I mean, almost a sort of metric of how big a deal it is necessary here. You need some sort of slide rule or a protractor or a compass. I'm just going to run through prep school stationery, I think, at the moment. Or a set square. Do you remember those little tins? Weren't they great? I used to love those at the beginning of every school year. Full of instruments, most of which you'd never use in the course of the year. But you need some sort of instrument to measure the scale of the scandal here, because it is a scandal. I don't think there's any other word for it. At the moment, I guess that the more sensible people are sticking with revelation. But for me, it's absolutely scandalous that you can send somebody to Washington as ambassador who has failed security vetting clearance. A decision that was then overruled by the Foreign Office so he could take up his post as ambassador to the US. The problem we have now is so much is still unknown. So many grey areas, the time scale. Ollie Robbins, who for a long time was the absolute bête noire of so-called Brexiters, he was their public enemy number one. They absolutely despised him. I don't know if any of them have had the brass neck to come out yet and start pretending that they believe he's a man of incredible brilliance and integrity, but mark my words, they will. People who not long ago were telling you that Ollie Robbins was the least trustworthy man in the history of the civil service will today, so desperate will they be to hurt Keir Starmer, will be pretending to believe that he's an absolutely stand-up guy who couldn't possibly have done any of the things that he's accused of doing because he's absolutely brilliant. Just please don't mention what I had to say about him during Brexit. But the idea that he would take it upon himself to stick this failed security vetting in a drawer and not tell anybody, not clear it with anybody above? Do you struggle to believe that? Because I kind of do. I kind of struggle to believe that. But I don't know. He'd only been in the job for about 10 minutes when this would have crossed his desk. And the announcement had already been made. So it is a little bit like starting a new job and realizing that you have to decide whether or not the first thing you do is put a hand grenade, pull the pin out of a hand grenade and pop it in the internal post to your new boss. They've already announced that Mandelson's going to Washington. Oh my lord, he's failed his security vetting. We're going to have to unannounce it. Or we're going to have to stick it in a bottom drawer and hope that nobody ever opens it again. And do you know what? If it wasn't for the revelations in the Epstein files, would this drawer ever have been opened at all? Would we ever have known that Peter Mandelson had failed this vetting process if the Epstein files hadn't revealed that he had lied about his relationship with the convicted billionaire paedophile? I always say billionaire, but with the convicted paedophile. And to give her her due, because in the spirit of a stopped clock, I think Cammie Badenoch has played this very, very well. As a consequence of what came out in the Epstein files, they're going over every element of that appointment with a fine-tooth comb, and guess what they found? I mean, probably the biggest thing you could hope to find if you were an enemy of this government or an enemy of Keir Starmer. What is the absolute best-case scenario for the opposition parties when an investigation into how an appointment was made is undertaken? The absolute best-case scenario, I think, is that he failed a vetting process and it was ignored. Things we don't know. By whom and why? Or even, perhaps, when? But by whom? We know Ollie Robbins ignored it. We're being asked to believe at the moment that nobody else knew, that nobody else did. I want you to focus today on a combination of understanding and feeling. Sometimes we go all the way down the feeling route, sometimes we go all the way down the knowledge route. But I think today is actually about both, because politics isn't a science. Certainly our politics are not scientifically created, otherwise we wouldn't be so nuanced and so different. Our politics are about a million different things. And I think I'm going to ask you whether or not you want Keir Starmer to resign. And that leaves open a myriad other questions that I can ask you in the course of the conversation. Listen, nobody's sort of forbidden from contributing to this program, but I think I would discourage people whose answer to that question is the same today as it would have been last week. Or certainly if you are absolutely and hideously opposed to him, then, I mean, today is great for you. And by all means, do a quick lap of honour. But I'm not sure you've got anything interesting to say about the latest developments, because you'd already arrived at this position of extremity before they were revealed. Similarly, if you can't imagine any circumstances whatsoever in which you would call for Keir Starmer to resign, then I don't know how interesting you will be. I don't know if Stormtrooper is a fair phrase or a fair word, but it seems to be quite an accurate description of people that I managed to offend a few months ago when I suggested that he was veering perilously close to ice that was not just thin, but was probably just cold, very cold water. And I'm not, I don't think, going to apologise for not answering that question early doors myself. I'm going to wait until I've heard a little bit of what you have to say. But I'm a dread to say it, to be honest with you, but I think I might be 52-48 on this. Because of what you wanted from him. I mean, reasons why I don't want him to resign would include the fear of chaos. The fact that there's a war on that he's handling exceptionally well. The fact that I can't quite see anything happening in the immediate aftermath of Keir Starmer's resignation that would be better for the country in many ways than Keir Starmer staying in Downing Street. That's not the biggest of my concerns, by the way, because there are two or three people who could quite quickly prove that they would be better prime ministers than him. But these are reasons why I don't want him to go. Reasons why I do want him to go, I think the first is actually patriotism. The first reason why I want Keir Starmer to go is that we have to be better than this. And just because I honestly and almost passionately thought that he would be, is not enough to dial down the anger and the upset that this is a situation the likes of which you expected to see under Boris Johnson, not under Keir Starmer. I don't think Keir Starmer has lied, so the parallels with Boris Johnson are fairly meaningless. Boris Johnson lied about everything. He's lied about everything and anything for his entire life. First people to point it out were his school teachers. Perfect qualifications for writing a column in the Daily Mail, not very good qualifications for being a prime minister. But this is why I kind of asked you a moment ago whether or not it matters. Whether or not the question of did he know or didn't he know actually matters, because I'm not sure it matters to me. I mean, if my scarf this morning were knotted so tightly around my neck that it had cut off the flow of blood to my brain, I think I would be arguing it. There's no way he knew, so how can he resign? Whoever has to resign over things that they didn't know about. I think Amber Rudd might have resigned over things that she didn't know about. Lord Carrington resigned over things that he didn't know about. And it's not an unprecedented practice in British politics, but I'm not wearing a scarf today. I'm just wielding a magnifying glass and a phone, of course, which you're welcome to dial up on 03456060973, because we have to be better than this. I mean, God forbid we end up with Nigel Farage in Downing Street. We will then have a significant period of time in which things get immeasurably worse. We'll go back to Boris Johnson's levels of moral corruption and worse. But that's not the point, you see. You can't form your opinions based on what you think about other people. I can't form my opinion on Keir Starmer in this moment based on my opinions about other people in other moments. You have to form your opinion about Keir Starmer in this moment based on what is happening now. And what is happening now is that the man who came into power promising a new era of transparency and due process has appointed to the role of the most senior British diplomat on the planet a man who had failed a security vetting process, and I'm not sure it matters whether he knew or not. I'm not sure it matters. That's why I mentioned that I'm 52-48, partly because it's obviously my favourite ratio, but also because it's a knife edge for me. I don't think it matters. I don't think it matters. I mean, if I did something outrageous and egregious on air, would my boss have to resign? It's not impossible, you know. Look at how the BBC works. How many people at the BBC have had to resign over the years because of things done by people much further down the ranks that they had no knowledge of at the time? In fact, you know what? This is a slightly grim observation. The BBC is probably the only organisation I can think of where that still holds true. Certainly doesn't hold true in Rupert Murdoch's empire, who will be gnashing their teeth and sharpening their knives this morning. Ditto over at the Daily Mail. People do something wrong. You can do something wrong as Prime Minister in the Daily Mail world and be rewarded with £500,000 a year to write a column. But the idea of an institution, an organisation, a pyramid, something rotten happens at level 3, 5, or 7 of the pyramid, the responsibility tracks all the way back to the top. I kind of want that for my country. And with Keir Starmer, I thought I'd got it. And that's why I am genuinely not sure whether or not it matters that he, and I, for the record and for now, I believe that he didn't know about this. So all of that, I think, sets a scene. And it makes a stage on which you can now step and simply tell me whether you want Keir Starmer to go, and why, or why not. So bring in any of the stuff we've just touched on, and all of the stuff that I've missed and forgotten and overlooked. But I think the central question this morning is whether or not you want him to go, because 52-48, right? And the pendulum is poised. But I think I might. 10:22.
LBC.
One of the best things about a holiday with Saga is your chauffeur, who'll pick you up and drive you to your departure point. Whether you're river cruising along the Rhine, or uncovering centuries of history on a tour of Japan. Even better, they'll pick you up and drive you home again afterwards. 2027 season now on sale. Search Saga Holidays. Experience is everything. Nationwide chauffeur service available on UK mainland. Full terms apply. Over 50s only. At all protected.
With Amex Platinum, Laura earns points on...
Can I have the soup and the salad and the tart?
And gets access to the Centurion Airport Lounge too.
Let's have a little relax, a little pudding.
And could use your points to travel for...
Las gambas con mantequilla y...
And that's because with dining, travel and lifestyle benefits, there's always more with Amex Platinum.
Representative 685.3% APR variable. Annual fee. Terms apply. 18 plus. Subject to approval. Rates may vary.
One of the best things about a holiday with Saga is your chauffeur, who'll pick you up and drive you to your departure point. Whether you're river cruising along the Rhine, or uncovering centuries of history on a tour of Japan. Even better, they'll pick you up and drive you home again afterwards. 2027 season now on sale. Search Saga Holidays. Experience is everything. Nationwide chauffeur service available on UK mainland. Full terms apply. Over 50s only. At all protected.
Approval.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
24 minutes after 10. The second show this week sponsored by The Clash. The first one was, should the King go to DC, go to America to help them celebrate their 250th anniversary? Should I stay or should I go? And today it's Keir Starmer's turn. Should he stay or should he go? What do you want and why? I suppose you could also have a side order of Ronan Keating, couldn't you, from the Prime Minister's point of view? His life certainly is, forgive me, a roller coaster. Nick's in Dudley. Nick, what have you got?
Hi, James. When you said the term stormtrooper at the beginning of the the show, I had a bit of self-reflection and thought, you know what, I think I've been backing him a little bit too much here. And I think my opinion has changed. Looked through my emails in the last... I wrote to my former Conservative MP in October 2022 saying this bring back Boris nonsense is a load of rubbish.
Yes.
And I wrote to my current Labour MP on the 10th of Feb, which I think from memory is probably when the Mandelson stuff, when he was arrested, saying, stick with him, this is storming a teacup nonsense. And I think we're at the point where it's a tipping point. And
but all three of those things can be true. You were right when you wrote to the Tory, you were right when you wrote to the Labour MP, but it doesn't necessarily mean that you have to be on the same tip today, does it?
No, I think it's the straw that's breaking the camel's back. I think Starmer has been let down by other people, sure. And I think by as a result, we have, as the British public, and somebody's got to go. And I think it's really important now that I think he does have to go.
Really?
Because otherwise we're going to end up in this situation where there's a right-wing narrative of civil service blocking what government wants to do, civil service letting government down. I mean, you think about the Conservatives saying, oh, you know, they were...
We have that already, mate. We have that already. They talk about the blob. They talk about, even some of them are mad enough to talk about the deep state. And Ollie Robbins has gone already. They've fired him, trying to create the idea that the buck stopped with him. That's the problem, isn't it? That even if nobody knew except him, which seems unlikely, the buck still doesn't stop with him in your mind.
I don't think it does. If nothing else, though, I think it sets a picture to... the danger we're going to have is that there's going to be a real narrative for some form of dissolution of the civil service or significant removal of its sort of presence in government. And ultimately, we need them to do stuff for us. The only solution I can think of to take a prime minister or a minister away from that level of accountability is if... you end up with some US-style appointees into a civil service department. And obviously, with who's going in at the moment in the US, that would come with pros and cons. But I think you would still have more accountability over here.
I this is a brilliant first call, thank you. Because you're highlighting so many of the things I'm worried about. The first thing I'm worried about, I articulated a moment ago, is that I fall into the trap of letting my knowledge of and fear of other people in other situations influence my reaction to Keir Starmer in this situation. And you've done something similar with regard to the civil service, because I don't know why I'm thinking more about alternative governments rather than another Labour government led by somebody else. But the civil service, you look at this Doge nonsense that Elon Musk has tried to inflict upon the United States of America. Some of the departments that they've filleted are now crying out for people to apply because so many people are resigning. I mean, the idea that the civil service is the enemy of government or the enemy of the people has already taken quite a big hold on far-right politics. And if we've learned anything in the last few years, it's that increasingly far-right politicians are trying to describe themselves as centre-right and getting ever closer to power. So the civil service... In a country led by any party other than Labour, is in existential threat. So do you see what I mean? So you're almost saying we need to get rid of him now, otherwise the civil service comes under attack. But it's coming under attack from people that are already attacking it, under your reading of the situation. And is that enough of a reason to give Keir Starmer his sandwiches wrapped in a roadmap?
I think the challenge you've got is if you don't, it's just one more bit of ammunition that those other parties have. It's one more bit of ammunition for them to come in and go, well, they did this, they did this, and nobody's accountable.
It's a competence question. Yeah, it's a competence question. I don't think it's a corruption question. If it turns out to be, we will shout it from the rooftops. But competent and or corrupt. All I ask is that you are either, you know, that you are competent and not corrupt. And there's no way they come out of this, is there? There's no way they come out of this with both of those achievements intact. They come out of this looking corrupt, or they come out of... He comes out of this looking corrupt or looking enormously incompetent, because you can't send someone to Washington, D.C. as the head of an organisation that has delivered a failed security vetting and nobody told you about it. That's on you, right?
Not without going down a Donald Trump style of fake news, and that's not something Starmer is going to look
to
do.
No, of course he's not.
I do genuinely think he's a moral bloke.
So do I.
And again, whether that's naivety
it's not. You're going on the available evidence, and you know, this is why. This is why it's so hard not to start whataboutering and reaching for the hideousness of a Liz Truss administration or the moral bankruptcy of a Boris Johnson administration, and giving your bloke, because under your analysis, he is your bloke, and people who listen to this programme know that in the current political panoply, he's my bloke. We can't give our bloke the benefit of the doubt, because the other lot have been so awful and his transgressions are nowhere near as bad. They are bad enough. That's the question. Are they bad enough? These transgressions to merit, justify, demand his resignation as Prime Minister. And I think they might be. And so does Nick, the first other voice to get on the programme this morning. You're not going to believe me now, are you? When I said to you 20 minutes ago, give it 5 minutes and someone will be coming along who used to describe Ollie Robbins as the Antichrist or as the worst imaginable public servant in the history of humanity, and now that he's a weapon with which you can beat Keir Starmer, they'll undertake a reverse ferret so violent that it will leave scorch marks on their own buttocks. But yes, it has happened already. I didn't know. No prizes for guessing who has done it. You can listen to that after the headlines with Dominic Ellis.
Sir Keir Starmer's chief secretary, Darren Jones, has told LBC the Prime Minister won't resign over the Lord Mandelson vetting row. The PO was denied security clearance in early 2025, but the Foreign Office then overruled it so he could take the job as US ambassador. President Trump says Iran has agreed to hand over its enriched uranium, which has held up talks to end the war. He's also said that peace talks could restart over the weekend. Tehran is yet to comment. And three people have been charged over a suspected arson attack at a Persian media organisation in northwest London. Police say a lit container was thrown at a premises in Wembley on Wednesday night. LBC weather. A band of rain will spread eastwards across much of the UK through Friday. The southeast will stay dry, though. A high of 16 degrees.
This is LBC.
At Lidl, we're giving you 50% off a fruit or veg item on your next shop. Just scan the Lidl Plus app at checkout, and when you scan, you'll be in with a chance to win your whole shop back. Open Lidl Plus and start saving today. Lidl, more to value. 18 plus GB residents, various prices available, subject to availability, end 30th of 5th, 26. Full T's and C's apply. See lidl.co.uk/lp-terms.
Turn up your taste buds with Dolmio Intensify pasta sauces. From mild creamy garlic and black pepper, to bold smoky garlic and sun-dried tomato, and spicy smoked paprika and chili.
Woo-hoo!
Try Dolmio Intensify, pasta sauces with serious flavour. Dolmio, yeah!
Oh, you want weight loss advice?
Weight loss? Actually, what you want to do...
I got my weight loss secret from my mother, who got it from her mother's
house. My
weight loss?
Advice.
Or you could go to MedExpress. MedExpress. Healthcare without the noise. Go to medexpress.co.uk/weightloss.
Ali 60 milligram hard capsules contain orlistat for overweight adults with a BMI of 28 plus. Follow a reduced calorie, low fat diet. Always read the label.
If you were missold a home on a holiday park, holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive compensation. Text ADVICE to 78900.
With an Amex business card, Selena's earning points renovating her skin clinic and refreshing the builders.
14 coffees and 28 sugars, please.
And on new adjustable chairs for every room. And she can use the points to lie back and relax.
Don't put ice cream on your brother's head.
Well, Sometimes. And that's because with an Amex business card, your points can go towards holidays and more.
Search Amex business card. Interest, fees and terms apply. Available to UK limited companies and limited liability partnerships. Signatories must be a director or member of the business. Subject to approval.
Our pet's in a pickle. We're here when it matters most. For fuss-free pet insurance policies as unique as they are. Visit petsinapickle.co.uk.
This is LBC. Message James O'Brien on WhatsApp now on 0345 60 60 973.
And then you sort of wonder, well, does it matter? So I get a lot of messages saying things like, well, Boris Johnson did this and Boris Johnson did that and he didn't resign, but he should have done. So these don't become... do they? I don't know. I mean, how many British journalists calling for Keir Starmer to go today have, until very, very recently, been blowing smoke up Donald Trump's backside? Have literally been excusing, cheering and championing corruption and moral bankruptcy on a scale the likes of which the civilised world has not seen since medieval times. You sit here enormously frustrated to hear... people who were stupid enough to deploy the phrase Trump derangement syndrome, but have gone pitifully quiet. Oh, we must have a look at what Richard Littlejohn's written about today. No doubt it will be about the situation in the Middle East and the enormously important issues being presided over by the man that he wishes was Prime Minister of this country, Donald Trump. But the people who have been like waving their Donald Trump pom-poms furiously as he rode roughshod over every semblance of... probity, integrity, morality, transparency, decency and honesty. You watch them today calling for Keir Starmer to go, suddenly discovering some great moral or political conscience. But it doesn't matter, does it? If it is the probity and the integrity to which you are committed and it is your patriotic duty to care about these things, then just because the other lot are disgusting doesn't mean you get to excuse your guy for presiding over something far less serious, but still serious enough. I'll give you an example of disgusting hypocrisy, something that I suggested to you 25 minutes ago would happen at some point today, but which had already happened. No prizes for guessing that Nigel Farage is the man of whom we speak. Here he is, talking about Ollie Robbins in 2008.
The problem, I'm afraid, is that there is a rogue element in these negotiations, a group of people who do not wish to see a solution, who've put up an immovable brick wall to stop us from breaking free. And I regret to say, actually, it isn't your chief negotiator, Monsieur Barnier, it is actually the British Civil Service, Ollie Robbins' team. They signed up years ago to the European dream. They've been happy to take their orders from Brussels. They are now out to sabotage Brexit. They are indeed the enemy within.
Sorry, 2018, not 2008. And here he is, the unspeakable skid mark on the Y fronts of British politics. Here he is this morning.
Whatever you think of Ollie Robbins and his role in the Brexit fiasco, he is one of the most professional civil servants in this country.
Is he a man you've met him, have you, Mr. Farage?
Yeah, I don't know him well, but I mean, look, you know, he is an intelligent bloke. He's a professional civil servant. I disagree with his politics, but hey, that is by the by. There is no way a man like that would unilaterally make a decision of this kind.
I'm going to play those to you again because I don't have the words to highlight the level of hypocrisy and disgraceful moral gymnastics on display here. Neither do I have the words to describe how stupid Nigel Farage thinks you are. That you will either not know or forget or overlook or forgive or excuse the absolute weapons-grade hypocrisy on display here. But you can't let your disapproval or your disgust at this kind of character colour your view of what is happening to Keir Starmer today. I don't think you can. Feel free to try to persuade me otherwise. Better the devil you know. My enemy's enemy is my friend. Be careful what you wish for. I don't know what phrase or aphorism you would deploy to do it, but maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it's politics. It's not religion. Maybe you should actually take into account how awful other people have been when sitting in judgment on Keir Starmer's latest difficulty, scandal, revelation. But I'm not thinking it myself. So, I mean, this is the same man speaking 8 years apart about the same man. And this is really the state of British politics. And I think for me and for Nick in Dudley and possibly for you, this is what Keir Starmer was supposed to be fixing. This is what he was supposed to be leading us out of. A political ecosystem in which clowns like this can be interviewed and not asked, for example, about what they said about the same man 8 years ago. I don't know how you can do that. Genuinely, I don't know how you can conduct an interview with Nigel Farage about Ollie Robbins this morning without having very briefly said to your producer, what did Ollie Robbins, has he ever said anything about Ollie Robbins in the past? Because it really, really matters. But it doesn't matter enough to let Keir Starmer off the hook. So here he is, 8 years ago, talking about Ollie Robbins.
The problem, I'm afraid, is that there is a rogue element in these negotiations, a group of people who do not wish to see a solution, who've put up an immovable brick wall to stop us from breaking free. And I regret to say, actually, it isn't your chief negotiator, Monsieur Barnier. It is actually the British Civil Service, Ollie Robbins' team. They signed up years ago to the European dream. They've been happy to take their orders from Brussels. They are now out to sabotage Brexit. They are indeed the enemy within.
Enemy within. That's Nazi language, right? That is the 1930s Germany language used to describe sections of society. It's a hideous phrase to deploy in any circumstances, right? Fast forward to this morning.
Whatever you think of Ollie Robbins and his role in the Brexit the fiasco, he is one of the most professional civil servants in this country.
Is he a man there you know? No you, way. You've met him, have you, Mr. Farage?
Yeah, I don't know him well, but I mean, look, you know, he is an intelligent bloke. He's a professional civil servant. I disagree with his politics, but hey, that is by the by. There is no way a man like that would unilaterally make a decision of this kind.
So he's a disgusting human being. He's the enemy within. He's colluding with foreign powers against the British interest. He's pulling the wool over the eyes of our own government. He's in cahoots with Jean-Michel Barnier to the detriment of the British interest. He's absolutely, in political terms, the devil incarnate. 8 years later, oh, he's an absolutely stand-up guy. There's no earthly way he'd... I mean, how? What's left the building during that little comparison there? What's left the building? What do we as a population lose when people like that are even invited to offer their opinions on today without being asked to explain their opinions yesterday? We lose something so precious. But what do we lose if Keir Starmer stays in power? Do you want him to go? And am I wrong to say that the hideous absence of integrity and decency on the part of almost all the current alternatives in other parties is even a mitigating factor in the treatment of Keir Starmer today? Because this is what I meant earlier by worrying that you lean too far to prove that you're not as craven and as hypocritical as the kind of people who've been blowing smoke up Donald Trump's fundament or allowing Nigel Farage to spout off about Ollie Robbins today without pointing out the polar opposite position that he adopted yesterday. Steve's in Chislehurst. Steve, what would you like to say?
Hiya, James.
Hello,
thanks for
Steve.
Having me on.
You're welcome.
So I am calling in because back in February when everything started coming up about the Mandelson appointment,
yeah.
I came to the conclusion that I thought it was the right time for him to go then. But I find myself with this news, I'm of the opposite opinion now.
Really?
And the reason, I know it sounds counterintuitive, but back in February, and I remember I was sitting on the bench in Sidcup at the time, waiting to take my theory test, so I remember the exact moment. And it was just, I agree there's that incompetence there, but it was incompetence without anything good surrounding it. There's been no achievements around that point. It was the combination of, you know, death by a thousand cuts. Since then, we've had this period where we've seen his response to the conflict in the Middle East.
Yes.
And I've finally seen something of achievement, something I can be proud of.
Yeah, but I'm the same as you, but you're going to have to work hard to persuade me you're not describing the knotting of a scarf now. He's done something good in an entirely different context, so we should let him off the hook in an entirely different context where he's done something very bad or presided over something very bad.
I do agree, but I don't... So, yes, I think there is a level of incompetence there. I agree with you and your previous caller. It's you have either got incompetence or corruption.
Yeah.
But I think that level of incompetence there was there when he said, oh, I asked Mandelson if he was still in contact,
yes,
and he told me he wasn't, and I accepted that. That felt, it hasn't struck me more, this. Now, if it turns out that he had in fact been informed, and he has misled Parliament, and this is more corruption, within an instant, I think he should be gone. But I think on the basis of what's best for the country at this point, I really struggle with the idea that this, compared to what was in February...
I'm very blessed this morning. The first two callers are really working as whetstones for my own thoughts and opinions, because I mean, you might be right, but does it matter? I mean, this is a fundamental question. Does it matter what else is going on?
I think it does. I think when you're looking at what, I mean, you want a leader to deliver what's best for the country. And I think you need to factor in whatever decision. I think you can also look back, and if we're doing it on the basis of competence, we haven't really had a competent person in position since probably Gordon Brown. So
that's very unfair on Liz Truss.
I'll write a letter of apology.
Yeah, I get. I mean, so really, and you might be right, and this is why I said at the outset that today is going to be at least as much about feelings as it is about facts. So, if everything was hunky dory in the realm, you probably would be saying he's got to go.
Yes, I would have been under that belief. It's purely because he has performed so well over this past 2 months. He's given me some confidence in him when before I had very little, unfortunately.
Yeah.
I still thought he was a decent man, so I agree with you and the previous caller again in that. But he wasn't showing any aptitude at that point.
And he has played a blinder over Iran, and for you that is enough to give him a break on this occasion. And for me and for Nick and Dudley and for many others at the moment, it isn't. Although there are plenty of people in your camp as well, as I shall share shortly. The time now is 10:46.
Tom Swarbrick on LBC.
Lord Peter Mandelson was initially denied clearance in late January 2025, any moment at which the Prime Minister told the House of Commons or told the country that the full complete process of this was undertaken and the final result was that he was appointed. How can you genuinely say that the full process to appoint someone was followed if the process to vet him, see whether he is straight shooting enough to be given that role of huge importance, said that he wasn't?
Tom Swarbrick, Monday to Friday from 4 p.m. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
You've probably been with the same energy supplier for decades, and why wouldn't you be? Loyalty matters. But lately, bigger hasn't always felt better. You've probably dealt with long waits and endless automated menus in search of someone who can actually help. Octopus Energy is now Britain's biggest energy supplier, trusted by over 8 million customers, because we do things differently. Our people focus on the most important thing, you. When you call, you'll speak to a real person. No robotic scripts, no computer says no, just an honest conversation with someone who actually wants to help. Join the millions who've already made the move. Octopus Energy, recommended by Which, a record 9 years running. Visit octopus.energy/better for verification.
Hello, beautiful people! Get ready to rock with a new Volkswagen T-Roc. With £2,000 towards your finance deposit on the new Volkswagen T-Roc with Solutions PCP 7.9% APR representative. Test drive the T-Roc today and see why it won What Car's Best Small SUV Award.
Order by the 4th of May 2026. Indemnities may be required. Volkswagen Financial Services.
You want weight loss advice?
Weight loss? Actually, what you want to do...
I got my weight loss secret from my mother, who got it from her mother's...
My tip is...
Weight loss?
Forget that.
Dragon fruit.
Podcast.
Advice.
Or
you could go to MedExpress. MedExpress. Healthcare without the noise. Go to medexpress.co.uk/weightloss.
Ali 60 milligram hard capsules contain orlistat for overweight adults with a BMI of 28 plus. Follow a reduced calorie, lower fat diet. Always read the label.
With an Amex business card, Selena's earning points renovating her skin clinic and refreshing the builders.
14 coffees and 28 sugars, please.
And on new adjustable chairs for every room. And she can use the points to lie back and relax.
Don't put ice cream on your brother's head.
Well, sometimes. And that's because with an Amex business card, your points can go towards holidays and more.
Search Amex business card. Interest fees and terms apply. Available to UK limited companies and limited liability partnerships. Signatories must be a director or member of the business. Subject to approval.
James O'Brien on LBC. Listen on your smart speaker. Just say, play LBC.
10:49 is the time. Miriam writes, Keir Starmer is a barrister. A barrister doesn't do the investigations. A barrister takes the brief from the investigating solicitors. This is significant in the way he works in government. Reaching a bit, I think, Miriam, because if a barrister stands up in court and says something that is not true, then the judge will have him over a barrel in a nanosecond. And this from Carol. Hi, James. Boris didn't go when he pushed an ex-Russian spy son into the Lords. He also failed a security vetting. I don't like Starmer, although I admit he's not my choice for leader. I believe he's playing in a system he's not in control of and is constantly being blindsided by the civil service. I mean, that is close to incompetence, if not corruption. And I'm going to say it again about Boris Johnson. It doesn't matter what he got away with, because he shouldn't have got away with it. So you can't say something awful happened over there to our country, done by a prime minister. Therefore, this prime minister, who has also presided over something awful, albeit not nearly as bad or as personal, he deserves a free pass. I'm just not buying that. And I know it's really hard to watch all these hypocrites and liars pretend that they give a hoot about probity or integrity or due process or the law or the rules or the regulations. Yeah, talking about people who will say, oh, international law, you know, never mind that. What we're worrying about, it's no big deal. And then when it's Keir Starmer on the, oh, my God, he bought a donkey sanctuary for his... It's incredibly frustrating. But I think you have to be better, don't you? Don't you? Whatever Boris Johnson did and got defended by liars, charlatans and client journalists, you can't be one of them when you're defending Keir Starmer on this. Unless the last caller's right and the situation is too serious to allow a desire to see him go or a reluctant conclusion that he's got to go prevail. Sarah is in Waltham Forest. Sarah, what would you like to say?
Oh, my word. Hello, James.
Hello, Sarah.
I haven't had time to think this one through.
Who put you on?
Lovely guy. Really, really lovely guy.
Go on.
It's just that my blood pressure is going through the roof here.
Yes.
I'm heartbroken. I'm disappointed. I'm beyond despair. I'm bereft. I'm sad. But I'm just horrified that Mandelson has ever been given the kind of free pass that he's been given for the last, 30 years or something. He clearly has been fated for
it is extraordinary. Project. It is extraordinary that every time they kind of finagle him into a plum job, it doesn't just bite them on the backside. It takes off an entire buttock.
I know. But I really do think it goes down to this thing that you often say about how nice liberals are, and we are, right?
Yes.
Always willing to extend the olive branch, always willing to understand where they're coming from. And I really, really, really mean that. But Mandelson, and of course we don't know anything about the dark arts. It's not in us. It's not in Starmer. He hasn't got that in his DNA. So where does he reach for when he's dealing with someone like Trump?
Mm.
I mean, just crying out loud. I feel so sorry for this man. I genuinely believe this. I don't
speak this language. Let's send someone who's fluent in it.
Yeah,
Peter Mandelson.
Yeah, and the whole media, the whole were behind it 100%.
I don't think that matters anymore. That mattered during the last conversation about whether he should go and whether he should stay, but it doesn't matter. I mean, we can point out the hypocrisy of other people until we're blue in the face, but I don't think that matters today.
James, the right-wing project, the billionaires project, has brought us to the brink of war. I mean,
beyond, beyond the brink of war.
Of course, we're seeing people die in our name.
So I'm not
we're seeing it
at that.
Day in. No, I know you're not. Yeah. We're seeing it. It's breaking my heart. I can't bear what is happening in our name whilst we carry on with worrying about our gas prices. I mean, that is important. But these people are dying. And. No, you know, I mean, we need someone of his caliber.
Well, so you are saying he should stay because things 100%. Are so serious?
100%.
Okay. And you've made a very heartfelt explanation as to why. I am, you know, sympathetic to elements of it, but I don't know that it's enough. So those are the two things now that are in the case for the defence of Keir Starmer. One is, well, look what the other lot got away with. It was much worse than this, and they didn't have to go until their own party hounded them out, even though liars and client journalists pretend that it had something to do with cake. Boris Johnson's dismissal, the speed with which they reverse ferreted on Liz Truss was supersonic. But I don't think that matters. You cannot, as Gary Burton says, you cannot set the standards where Johnson got away with. That can't be the bar. It wasn't as bad as Johnson, therefore he should keep his job. I don't buy that. That's awful. From a patriotic perspective, we have to be better as a country, not partisan, not liberal versus illiberal. We have to be better. Starmer was supposed to be, and he hasn't been. But it wasn't his fault. That's item number three for the defence, isn't it? So one is the comparisons. Two is the not knowing. And three is the situation in the world at the moment is so serious, and he is handling the biggest issue of all quite brilliantly, therefore leave him where he is. Those are your three things. Comparisons with past prime ministers, which he comes out favourably for anybody honest, simply not knowing that Mandelson had failed this vetting process, which I think is probably the case, but I don't know that it matters as much as some people are arguing. And finally, the sort of not now argument. The world is in too much turmoil. Donald Trump remains in the White House. We can't be having a psychodrama in Downing Street. And, I mean, none of those on their own are enough, are they? But combined, together? I can tell you that Sir Keir Starmer has said this morning that he is furious and that it was unforgivable that neither he nor any minister were told that Lord Peter Mandelson had failed security vetting, and he has pledged to set out all the relevant facts in Parliament on Monday. And whether or not he is, well, I think he is in fact addressing the nation. Do we have that to play out, or are we going to have the audio on this? We don't, so just bear with me a moment and I'll have that audio for you in just a second. In the meantime, obviously, with the caveat that I may have to interrupt you to listen directly to the Prime Minister, Edward is in The Hague. Edward, what do you think?
Hi, good morning, James.
Hello.
I think that he should announce on Monday that he is intending to resign, that he's intending to shepherd the country through the summer until conference, and that a new Labour leader and Prime Minister will therefore be appointed in the early autumn.
Is there a precedent for that? Is there a precedent for that?
I can think back, for example, to David Cameron announcing after the Brexit referendum a certain period of time, and then he would be leaving.
Yeah.
So I believe that he deserves an awful lot of credit, and he also deserves the opportunity to continue to shepherd the UK and the wider world through what's going on in the Gulf at the moment. But I can recall, for example, once at work making a mistake and my boss telling me it's going to be okay as long as this doesn't become, quote, a pattern of behavior. And I think with Keir Starmer, what we have now are mishaps that have become a pattern of behavior, whether it's the management of the economy, the winter fuel allowance, the withdrawal from climate change targets. You can just line up like dominoes, a whole series of things that you can either call mishaps or transgressions, but the real
there's a huge difference between a mishap and a transgression. This is indubitably a transgression. I don't know. Some of the other things you've cited are at the very least debatable as either mishap or transgression. And the last caller pointed out that an awful lot of capital has been restored by his conduct since Netanyahu and Trump went to war in Iran, but obviously for you, not enough.
Well, let's address that, because the Politico opinion poll this week, the poll of polls, suggests Labour is at 16%. And I'm just not sure that there's a way back from that. And if you look around the world right now, you'll see that whether it's Carney or whether it's Albanese or whether it's Magyar in Hungary or whether it's Tusk in Poland, people have found a way to push back the tide of populism. Well, and we need something similar.
You've got Meloni in Italy, you've got the new fella in France who's currently the favourite to win. I mean, the far right are not exactly in retreat, are they? There's just a few places where, you mentioned Hungary, of course. There's just he's quite a right wing politician. He's just not a far right, he's just not a far right populist. But none of these are really reasons why Starmer should go. They are, because I can't say comparisons with previous prime ministers, not knowing about the vetting failure, or things are too serious at the moment. I can't say you need to add them all together to mount a proper defence, and then say to you, you can't add all these things together to mount a proper prosecution. You're doing exactly what I just did, but from the other side of the courtroom.
Yeah, and on top of that, if you look at the pattern of behaviour within the Mandelson situation alone, I don't think you needed detailed vetting to know that this man shouldn't have been appointed ambassador to Washington. I think that was a fundamental mistake to begin with. When the initial news broke, I can recall the Prime Minister giving a vote of confidence in Parliament on a Wednesday to Peter Mandelson. It was then only a couple of days later that he was finally fired. Now we have this situation arising. So even in this one specific case, there has been three or four opportunities to actually put this right.
And he hasn't. And it doesn't matter to you. Yeah, because optics, I know it's a dreadful word, but it doesn't matter what has happened. What matters is what we can see. And what we can see, as you say, is climb down statement, climb down revelation, humiliation, fury. We'll probably be hearing what the Prime Minister himself has been saying during the news bulletin and then probably in greater detail afterwards.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 11 o'clock, Sir Keir Starmer's chief secretary has told LBC that the Prime Minister won't resign over the Lord Mandelson vetting row. The peer was denied security clearance in early 2025, but the Foreign Office overruled that so he could take the job as US ambassador. Downing Street insists that Sir Keir Starmer was only made aware of the revelations on Tuesday. And speaking from Paris in the last few minutes, Sir Keir Starmer says he's furious that he wasn't told and will give a statement setting out the relevant facts on Monday.
I was not told that he had failed security vetting. No minister was told that he'd failed security vetting. Number 10 wasn't told that he'd failed security vetting. That is completely unacceptable. That is why I intend to go to Parliament and set out all of the relevant facts so Parliament has full transparency and full accountability. It is totally unacceptable.
The top civil servant in charge of the Foreign Office, Sir Ollie Robbins, has now left his post, but the independent MP Diane Abbott says she finds it hard to believe that Sir Keir Starmer was left in the dark about the issue.
I feel that it's just not possible that Number 10 didn't know. And I think to try and pretend Number 10 didn't know, when anybody who follows those issues would know that that can't be true, is the kind of thing that undermines people's faith in politics.
Pressure is building on Sir Keir Starmer. Over the revelations, the Conservative leader, Kemi Badenoch, says Sir Keir has to take full responsibility.
On the 5th of February, at a press conference in Hastings, the Prime Minister said that Peter Mandelson cleared the vetting process. This is not true. That means he broke the ministerial code by saying something deliberately untrue. He misled the country.
Stay with LBC for the very latest. President Trump says Iran has agreed to hand over its enriched uranium, which has held up talks to end the conflict. He also says peace talks could restart this weekend. Tehran is yet to comment on the claims, though. Three people have been charged over a suspected arson attack at a Persian media organisation in northwest London. Police say a lit container was thrown at a premises in Wembley on Wednesday night. A 21-year-old man, a 19-year-old man and a 16-year-old boy have been charged with arson with intent to endanger life. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down 19 at 10,570. The pound buys $1.35 and €1.14. LBC weather. A band of rain will spread eastwards across much of the UK through Friday. The southeast staying dry, a high of 16 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Get that Euro Millions feeling with Friday's £114 million jackpot. Plus, 10 UK winners are guaranteed to be millionaires. That's 10 more reasons to dance. 10 more robots, 10 more limbos, 10 more salsas. Friday's EuroMillions jackpot is £114 million. And 10 UK winners are guaranteed to be millionaires. EuroMillions from the National Lottery. It could be you. Estimated jackpot. Rules apply. 18 plus.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Minutes after 11, and if Ollie Robbins has undergone something of a reputation rehabilitation from the liars and charlatans, then Diane Abbott is about to undergo exactly the same process, isn't she? People who have been vile and hideous in their condemnation and racist, often abuse of her over the years, will now be holding her up as a paragon of political virtue because she's saying something that they want to hear. So just as Farage's comments about Ollie Robbins being the enemy within, extraordinary language to use about your own country's civil service in the European Parliament, and then fast-forwarding 8 years to him suddenly becoming some sort of paragon of a virtue, so it will be with Diane Abbott. But she, if more than any perhaps politician in this country, has earned the right to say whatever she wants about whoever she wants, whenever she wants. Doesn't mean you have to agree with her. 5 minutes after 11 is the time, and we will hear the Prime Minister's statement in full. Does it matter? Is the question that's running through everything this morning, like a stick of rock. Does it matter that he didn't know? Does it matter that he didn't know? It's almost a song lyric, isn't it? Does it matter that he didn't know? And how does your answer to that question get framed? Does it draw on where we are now, politically, internationally, militarily? Does it draw on diplomacy? Or does it draw on what the alternatives would be if he went? And am I wrong this morning to argue that you have to ignore all of that and judge the man in this moment? Of course, you can do that and still conclude that he shouldn't go. You can judge the man in this moment and conclude that what has happened is not enough to merit a resignation. But it's tight, isn't it? It's really tight. 5 minutes after 11 is the time. Sanjay's in Harrow. A couple of phone lines free for the first time since about 10:30. So if you want one of those, then do crack on and dial 03456060973. We'll be staying with this for the foreseeable, so we will get to you, even if it takes a while. Sanjay's in Harrow. Sanjay, what would you like to say?
Hi, James. I've enjoyed listening to you.
That's a relief.
well, I think that he shouldn't resign. I think he will be turning it over in his mind and playing out the scenarios over the weekend.
Yes,
probably that's why he's given himself time.
Yeah,
I think as a country we're kind of cutting our nose to spite our face, because look, the world isn't black and white. You know, politicians wear personas, and you know, you only have to watch in the Yes Minister or in the thick of it, and you see, as you mentioned, the optics versus what they say in private. And he's running a country. And, you know, as just some of your previous callers have said, running a country, including defence, there are hard choices to be made, uncomfortable choices to be made, and sometimes the public doesn't want to know. I'm reminded of the film, where some of your listeners might remember, A Few Good Men.
You can't handle the truth!
You can't handle the truth, exactly. You don't want to know the truth. So I think there are shades of grey with this. The world is
it's another great film.
The world is it's there's a lot of instability. I think the alternatives to Keir going are worse. He is a man of integrity. I mean, we know that. I mean, you know, you talk about Boris Johnson and other people, that's a different scale of a mess.
Does it matter? So,
it does matter. We do need integrity.
No. Does it matter that all of the people calling for Keir Starmer to go were excusing and cheering and facilitating and championing the far, far worse transgressions and lies and omissions of Boris Johnson right up until the moment he was dragged? Well, actually, he ran away, didn't he, in disgrace?
Well, you know, there's some hypocrisy, you could say, there.
But it doesn't matter in this moment, does it? Or does
no,
it? No, it
where,
doesn't.
Where, look,
it
where,
does,
where, where, you know, we can be pedantic or we can be pragmatists.
Yeah.
The world, right now, we need pragmatism. We can't just say, well, look, some rules have been broken. And, you know, I heard some of the news and you reminded me of, you know, when I heard some of that played back of what people were saying. and, you know, Kemi Badenoch and others. And yes, I think it was wrong that he said, Keir Starmer, he said, well, I wasn't told. I think there's a statement he read out. He said, I wasn't told. But why didn't he ask?
Well, you're a genius. That's exactly where I was going to steer the conversation next, after we hear Keir Starmer's statement in full. Because, I mean, what level has... Sanjay, come in, sit down. Nice to see you. So we're appointing Peter Mandelson to the job in Washington. Has he passed his vetting, Sanjay? Say yes.
Yes, yes, he's passed
his
vetting.
Okay. Now, I don't say now. All right, prove it. I don't believe you.
Well, can I say, because I've got some experience of vetting and, you know, being in the civil service and working with people and things. I know what developed vetting entails, and it's a lot.
It is.
You have to go through all the financial records of a person, and you actually have to interview people right from their childhood friends to say, have this person likely to be...
I've got Callum Miller coming on at 11:30, the Liberal Democrat MP who spent years in the Cabinet Office and has, like you, a deep understanding of developed vetting. So not only have you jumped the gun on where I was going to steer the conversation next, but you're kind of eating my next guest's lunch, and I never book guests. I probably didn't need to today. I should have just relied on my callers like I always do, because Sanjay knows the score himself. And so that makes you think that he either could or should have said... prove to me that he's passed his vetting, or that that was a fairly crass question on my part in the first place.
Keir Starmer is a technocrat.
He is.
So he follows process. So he technically, he can say he passed developed vetting because he did. Mm. I mean, it was overruled. They said, well, you know, we've got some concerns. But in the process, overruling what the security team have judged is still part of the process.
Overruling
it is still... So technically, he has passed the developed vetting.
Because the Foreign Office have ignored that element of the findings and said he's fine. So the message that reaches Keir Starmer's office is that he's passed.
Yes.
Wow.
Yes. So technically... you can say, well, he hasn't lied. He's followed the process.
I never thought he'd lied, but that little bit there, and that will come as news, I think, to many people, certainly to me, is a little bit of a changer, isn't it?
But
for you then, that becomes the grounds for arguing that he should stay, when you add it to all the other considerations that we've been examining this morning.
I think the alternative is worse. We've got to look at the bigger picture here.
Do we? Do we really have to look at the bigger picture, Sanjay? Because that's what I'm struggling with this morning.
Well, we do, because you can't just focus on a detail. I know this is hard to swallow for a lot of people.
Yes.
But in the big scheme of things, I mean, seeing the big picture is actually one of the competences of being a civil servant.
Right.
And, you know... you would say, well, okay. I mean, I don't know what was going on. I wasn't involved at the time when he was appointed. But, you know, you could feasibly say, well, we haven't had a deal with America. And by the way, can I just sort of say one thing?
Of course. You can say two things if you want.
which is, so for the awareness of some of your listeners, we rely on America for our defence.
Yeah.
And people say we can, you know, go it alone. All of our domestic and military satellite capability, how many satellites do we have? And the answer is none. We rely on American satellites.
You're highlighting the simple truth that we cannot do a Spain. We cannot just tell Donald Trump to sling his hook or invite his fury or do a Mark Carney.
No, because any of our systems, our Trident systems or any of our other systems, our missile firing technology, we cannot aim it at anything without American intelligence. And that's nothing new that I haven't said. That hasn't been published already
in
various newspapers and things. So... we need to build a relationship. I mean, people try.
Okay, final question. Final question. I understand that point. I'm not cutting you off. I think you've made it powerfully already. The reasons goes right up to the question of why did he want Mandelson in there in the first place so desperately.
Well, he could have got another person. He could have got somebody else who was sort of in the dark arts. I mean, there isn't a coincidence either that McSweeney was an apprentice of Mandelson and then became the right hand.
And that's still bubbling away on a different ring. Hang on. I want to ask you this. What is the difference between saying that he passed vetting and saying I wasn't told that he failed? And how big a difference is that?
Well, technically, and I remember, I think Keir Starmer is a technocrat,
yeah.
That you can say, well, he's passed vetting.
Right.
Whether the process was, well, he failed the security team's part of the process and then was overruled by a senior civil servant in the Foreign Office.
So you think this is plausible, this timeline?
Well, plausibility is to do with other things, isn't it?
I bet you are good at this job, Sanjay. I love the way your brain works.
It's to do with trust and things, and, you know, that's, you're getting into the political sphere.
You are?
Whether Keir Starmer, has he lost the trust of the public? I mean, you know, the polls will speak to that. And I think...
I don't think this will affect the polls much, personally. I don't think it's a Westminster story. I think it's a hugely, hugely important story, but I don't think it... I don't think it's Clapham omnibus territory. Personally, I could be wrong. Hey, my phones have gone bonkers, so maybe that means it is something people care about a bit more than I would allow. But then if you're listening to this programme, you're probably part of a self-selecting sample anyway, aren't you? This radio station. A brilliant call, Sanjay. I'm very lucky that you were listening today. And no doubt Callum Miller, when he joins us at about 11:45, will expand on some of the points that you have made. A due process and a technicality are good things. You might roll your eyes at the use of words like that, but that is the whole point about facts versus feelings. Due process and technicality are the only things that can be properly measured, analysed and checked. The rest is opinion. Here is Keir Starmer's full statement just a few minutes ago.
Prime Minister, politicians resign when they mislead the public and mislead Parliament. Are you considering your position?
That I wasn't told that Peter Mandelson had failed security vetting when he's appointed is staggering. That I wasn't told that he'd failed security vetting when I was telling Parliament that due process had been followed is unforgivable. Not only was I not told, no minister was told. And I'm absolutely furious about that. What I intend to do is to go to Parliament on Monday to set out all the relevant facts in true transparency so Parliament has the full picture.
Prime Minister, why do you always end up sounding like the passenger in this government rather than the driver? Are you really expecting us to believe that a senior civil servant off his own back, without any sort of direction about the importance of Peter Mandelson being ambassador, unilaterally overruled security vetting to approve a political appointment? And they made clear it was political.
I was not told that he had failed security vetting. No minister was told that he'd failed security vetting. Number 10 wasn't told that he'd failed security vetting. That is completely unacceptable. That is why I intend to go to Parliament and set out all of the relevant facts so Parliament has full transparency and full accountability. It is totally unacceptable that the Prime Minister making an appointment is not told that security vetting has been failed. Totally unacceptable.
You're almost 2 years in post. Doesn't this just sound like you don't have a grip on your government?
I was not told that security vetting had failed. That is shocking. It is unacceptable. And I intend to set out the full facts to Parliament on Monday.
You're here in Paris talking about how to keep open the Straits of Hormuz, or to reopen it. But it's not in the gift of any of the people that you're meeting here in Paris. So what's the point of today?
It is very important that we build a coalition of countries around the principle that the ceasefire should be permanent, there should be a deal, and that the Straits of Hormuz are open. It is in all of our interest to do that, because what's happening in the war in Iran is affecting each of our economies. That's why countries are coming together. Everybody is clear that in order for that to happen, we need a diplomatic and political limb, we need a logistics and economic link, and we need some military planning. And that is what we're coming together to do today. And it's the right thing to do, because the longer this conflict goes on, the more the impact, and I'm mindful that people across the United Kingdom, that's impact on them and the cost of living. And I will do everything I can with other countries to alleviate that and to get the Strait open as soon as possible.
18 minutes after 11, extraordinary, really, that the three things we'd assembled as articles for the defence of Keir Starmer, the two biggest, that he didn't know and that the situation is too serious, are so front and centre in that statement. I mean, really, he's going all in on I didn't know. So our question changes slightly as we move forward into, does that matter? Does that change anything for you? I mean, the passion with which he is stating that he didn't know, the palpable anger with which he is insisting that he didn't know, At 10 o'clock this morning, that wasn't enough for me. Hearing him in his own voice, in his own words, explain why it matters, it's still not enough for me. 51-49, maybe. Does it? How much does it matter that he didn't know? Sanjay's contribution, combined with the precedent, if you like, the tradition of ministers only being told the final finding, so the final outcome, the yay or the nay, they're not told anything else. The Foreign Office would have passed to Downing Street a yes. They would not have said, oh, that's a yes, but in brackets, the security vetting fair. You can understand why he's so flipping furious, can't you? Can you? Of course, plenty of people won't believe him. You might reach for the thing I reach for quite a lot over the years, which is the Shaggy defence. It wasn't me. But there's no way that applies in this case, because he has not been getting jiggy on the bathroom floor. He is in the dark. But that, for many of us, is almost as unforgivable as having known all about it in the first place and decided to lie. Kemi Badenoch, as is often the case, would have done well to stay quiet, I think, this morning. An impossible ask, I think, of any opposition leader, let alone her. But I think she's got the ministerial code wrong. If he said it at a press conference, then he hasn't misled Parliament. And if he hasn't done it knowingly, then he hasn't breached the code at all. But hey-ho. At least in a complicated and confusing world, some things are constant, and Kemi Badenoch, sticking her size fours in her mouth, is reassuringly reliable. It's 20 minutes after 11.
This is LBC.
Hey, Harry. Hello, mate. Any tips for the game?
If it's games you want, your best bet is to check out Bet Victor's Casino Games. They've got more games than you've had hot dinners. In fact, they've got more games than Las Vegas Gaming Convention's annual convention of games.
Lots of games. Got it.
Yep, there's over 4,000 slot games, including all your favourites like Big Bass Bonanza, live casino tables like roulette and blackjack, and casino games like Crazy Time.
Listen to Harry and make your best bet on Bet Victor Casino. 18+ gamblerware.org.
When you're smiling.
Banning Dental Group Clinics. With over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
With an Amex business card, Selena's earning points renovating her skin clinic and refreshing the builders.
14 coffees and 28 sugars, please.
And on new adjustable chairs for every room. And she can use the points to lie back and relax.
Don't put ice cream on your brother's head.
Well, sometimes. And that's because with an Amex business card, your points can go towards holidays and more.
Search Amex business card. Interest fees and terms apply. Available to UK limited companies and limited liability partnerships. Signatories must be a director or member of the business. Subject to approval.
Do you ever feel like getting back under your duvet in the middle of the day? Ferroglobin is a great-tasting liquid formula with iron, which contributes to the reduction of tiredness and fatigue and normal formation of haemoglobin. Ferroglobin from Vitabiotics at Boots, pharmacies and vitabiotics.com.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
21 minutes after 11 is the time. Can we listen again to the beginning of that? So Sam Coates for Sky News asking the Prime Minister about the story that dominates all of our bulletins and conversations at the moment, because there is a very real possibility of a Prime Minister resigning. My personal opinion is that that likelihood is diminished, having heard the way that he is talking. He's not just standing his ground, he's elbows up, as the Canadians say. But of course it may not matter. Very few prime ministers head for the exit door willingly and happily. I suppose David Cameron did, in a way, didn't he? He took a decision after the referendum result came in that he didn't want to hang around to help clean up the mess that he'd made. And therefore, he did not need any external pressure or leverage to walk the plank. But I don't think that you can read too much into the fact that Keir Starmer is currently determined to stay when it comes to answering the question of whether or not he will, or indeed whether or not he should. But I think it's interesting. I opened the show this morning by saying that we were in one of those curious moments where emotion matters as much as facts and evidence, never more so than when you hear the tone adopted by the Prime Minister and the very palpable anger on display here.
Prime Minister, politicians resign when they mislead the public and mislead Parliament. Are you considering your position?
That I wasn't told that Peter Mandelson had failed security vetting when he's appointed is staggering. That I wasn't told that he'd failed security vetting when I was telling Parliament that due process had been followed is unforgivable. Not only was I not told, no minister was told. And I'm absolutely furious about that. What I intend to do is to go to Parliament on Monday to set out all the relevant facts in true transparency so Parliament has the full picture.
Prime Minister, why do you always end up sounding like the passenger in this government rather than the driver? Are you really expecting us to believe that a senior civil servant off his own back without any sort of direction about the importance of Peter Mandelson being ambassador unilaterally overruled security vetting to approve a political appointment, and they made clear it was political?
I was not told that he had failed security vetting. No minister was told that he'd failed security vetting. Number 10 wasn't told that he'd failed security vetting. That is completely unacceptable. That is why I intend to go to Parliament and set out all of the relevant facts.
So, Parliament has roll on Monday. Because, of course, he clearly believes that what he will present to Parliament will exonerate him of the suspicion expressed there by Sam Coates, the Sky News political journalist, political correspondent, that he is lying. I don't think he was lying at 10 o'clock this morning, and I don't think he's lying now. I don't think he knew. Whether or not that is an omission, a misstep, an error so egregious and extraordinary that he should still go is a question that we need to answer. But I think the next stage of the phone-in will be contingent upon the presumption that he's not lying. Which at least means we can cross one thing off our list of things with which to defend Keir Starmer, should you be so minded. He is not lying. So the comparisons with Boris Johnson disappear. He is telling the truth. There's no earthly way he'd have made that statement in the manner that he did if he wasn't confident that he can prove on Monday that he was not told. My understanding is that the ministers are simply given the green tick or the red cross when it comes to a process like this, and that means Downing Street were given the green tick, which puts the Foreign Office on the hook, which is why they fired Ollie Robbins. So the plan is that all bucks stop with him. And he, the Prime Minister, clearly believes that come Monday he will be able to essentially box in that buck on Ollie Robbins' doorstep. And I don't know. The things that he can't control, of course, include coverage, public opinion, optics, and unhappiness on his own benches. But for the purposes of our conversation now, he is telling the truth. But is that enough? Does that matter? 03456060973. Of course, some callers who've been waiting to answer the earlier questions will be on the board already, and we'll work our way through those as well. But I really want to just move that element of it front and centre. We've been asking it since 10 o'clock, but it becomes more pertinent now. Does it matter that he didn't know? Patrick's in Lambeth. Patrick, what do you think?
Hello there. Hi, James. I've been listening with interest. I didn't particularly like what Starmer just said, I must say.
Why not?
Well, I think the thing that's got missing, and I'm not sure that anyone has really focused on it, is that there's a long-standing principle that when civil servants make mistakes, ministers take responsibility for those mistakes. Mm. And we're not seeing that at all. We're seeing that Starmer's saying, well, it was the Foreign Office's fault, I didn't know about it, therefore I'm not to blame. And I just don't think personally that is tenable or acceptable. But where I actually started out at sort of 10 o'clock was I don't have enough understanding of the facts. There are a lot of unanswered questions. I'll wait until Monday. Mm. Starmer has confirmed that he will give a statement in Parliament setting out those facts. And then we'll see where that leaves us. I am very much in the same camp as you. It's sort of 51 that he stays, 49 that he goes.
I'm the other way around at the moment.
I mean, it's really close, and I will judge it on what happens on Monday.
But it's interesting, you don't think, if it is proved beyond reasonable doubt that he didn't know, that's not enough for you to
No, it's not.
No, I didn't.
I think he set out his stall as being, you know, a man of probity, a man of responsible
process.
Governance.
Process is the word here. Key.
Well, probity too, I think.
Sure.
And the same for Rishi Sunak, for that matter.
Yeah, that's true.
And I do think the principle that where civil servants make mistakes, if it is in fact the case that it was Ollie Robbins who unilaterally overrode the security vetting, then somebody at ministerial level should take responsibility. Now, the cynic that I am thinks that Starmer will try to throw somebody under the bus if it comes to it, and I wonder if that might be Darren Jones, who presumably was very involved in all of this and has been doing the rounds this morning.
Yeah. The idea that there will be no ministerial blood on the carpet, given the scale of the revelation seems a little bit optimistic, doesn't it? But, I mean, crikey.
It does. Can I just throw one other thing in?
Of course you can.
So, I'm a lawyer. He's a lawyer. He knows how to cross-examine. I think the lack of curiosity, if assuming we accept Starmer's account as true, which I do, why did they not ask any questions about the security vetting? It's an obvious thing to ask in relation to somebody with a past like Peter Mandelson.
This is why I think Callum Miller, MP, will be a particularly interesting guest in about 15 minutes' time, because he has personal experience of precisely this process and indeed working in the Cabinet Office. But and the pat answer to your question is, of course, because you don't want to hear answers that you don't want to hear.
Exactly. And so if I feel that we're in that territory, it shuts down for me. He needs to go.
Except that it is always done like this. The report comes back from the Foreign Office. Is it a thumbs up or a thumbs down? It's a thumbs up. How do you interrogate that?
Well, as I say, it's about, he's a lawyer. It's about knowing.
Yeah, I mean, he's a lawyer by training, but he's not. He's a prime minister in the context of this conversation, and his trusted lieutenants have said to him, it's a yes. Why would he say prove it?
Yeah, I mean, look, there's no smoke without fire, I would say, where Mandelson is concerned. And I think that probably what was going on was that Starmer wanted this way through and he just didn't ask the questions because it was an inconvenient thing to do.
And that ship had already sailed. They'd already sacrificed, I like your use of the word probity, they'd already sacrificed some of their principles on the altar of getting a snake into the embassy to deal with a snake in the White House.
Exactly.
So it sets a tone, doesn't it, for what would be the perfect word to use? Compromise. It sets a tone for moral compromise.
I mean, one of your earlier callers raised the question about, well, why on earth did he put Mandelson forward in the first place? And I do think it does come back to that error of judgment.
Or that epic miscalculation, which for a long time looked like a stroke of diplomatic genius. It can be both. I mean, it is now an error of judgment, but at the time, as I think it was Sarah pointed out, everybody was praising that decision from the rooftops, including characters like Michael Gove and Nigel Farage, although certainly the latter of those two is unlikely to admit the reverse ferret they've undertaken on this, as with almost every other issue. Patrick, great stuff. Thank you. I always get a bit nervous when callers tell me that they're lawyers, because I think there might be an invoice in the post by the end of the next news bulletin. And here it is with Dominic Ellis.
Sir Keir Starmer says it's staggering that he wasn't told Lord Mandelson failed his security vetting for the job of US ambassador. The PO was denied clearance in early 2025, but the Foreign Office overruled the report so he could take the job. The Prime Minister says he's absolutely furious and will update MPs in Parliament on Monday. Sir Keir was speaking from Paris, where the UK and France are holding joint discussions about talks on the future of the Strait of Hormuz. Discussions are expected to focus on how the key waterway can be kept open after the Iran war ends. And Kensington Gardens in central London has been closed for the day due to a police investigation. Details are limited at this stage, but people are being told to avoid the area until further notice. LBC weather, a band of rain spreading eastwards across much of the UK, the southeast staying dry, a high of 16 degrees.
This is LBC.
With an Amex business card, Selena's earning points renovating her skin clinic and refreshing the builders.
14 coffees and 28 sugars, please.
And on new adjustable chairs for every room. And she can use the points to lie back and relax.
Don't put ice cream on your brother's head.
Well, sometimes. And that's because with an Amex business card, your points can go towards holidays and more.
Search Amex business card. Interest fees and terms apply. Available to UK limited companies and limited liability partnerships. Signatories must be a director or member of the business. Subject to approval.
Oh, you want weight loss advice?
Weight loss? Actually, what you want to do...
I got my weight loss secret from my mother, who got it from her mother's
weight loss?
Advice.
Or you could go to MedExpress. MedExpress. Healthcare without the noise. Go to medexpress.co.uk/weightloss.
Ali 60 milligram hard capsules contain orlistat for overweight adults with a BMI of 28 plus. Follow a reduced calorie, low fat diet. Always read the label.
Dreaming of a new kitchen? Getting started couldn't be easier. At Wix, you can begin planning your new kitchen with our design consultants. Simply arrange a free home measure or an in-store design consultation. Book your free kitchen design appointment and turn all your ideas into reality at Wix.
with a new Volkswagen T-Roc. With £2,000 towards your finance deposit on the new Volkswagen T-Roc with Solutions PCP 7.9% APR representative. Test drive the T-Roc today and see why it won What Car's Best Small SUV Award.
Order by the 4th of May 2026. Indemnities may be required. Volkswagen Financial Services.
James O'Brien on LBC. Listen on your smart speaker. Just say, play LBC.
It is 11:34. You are listening to James O'Brien on LBC, where, I mean, if you needed... So we've got three real... what do you call them? Like an article of evidence. Three arguments for the defence, is it? You have arguments for the prosecution and arguments for the defence. So there's three arguments for the defence of Keir Starmer this morning as he faces arguably the most difficult weekend of his prime ministerial career are, in no particular order, you can't go after Keir Starmer for this because previous prime ministers, most obviously Boris Johnson, have behaved in infinitely worse manners. I'm very much of the view that that doesn't matter, even though it's true. And, of course, the Boris Johnson cheerleaders, who are now suddenly pretending to care about probity and integrity and lying repeatedly about cake, their hypocrisy, although irritating, is not relevant. Argument number two, the situation is too serious for this sort of domestic psychodrama. That's probably the most powerful until Keir Starmer gave a speech 10 minutes ago, 20 minutes ago, 35 minutes ago, in which he made it pretty clear that he is confident he can prove he didn't know. And that's a good phrase, confident he can prove he didn't know. Because, of course, that leaves the door ajar for him failing to prove that he didn't know, to the satisfaction of an impartial, unbiased observer. But I don't think he'd have come out swinging in the way that he just did in that pulled clip that you heard, were he not confident that come Monday, he can prove that he didn't know. But is that enough? Let's say he didn't know. Should he stay or should he go? All right, who's playing bass? 03456060973. Let's say he didn't know. Should he stay or should he go? And obviously on this programme, not only do I want you to explain why and how you have arrived at your conclusion, but I want you to show your working as well. Taz is in Pangbourne. Taz, what would you like to say?
Yeah, hi, James. I think he has been, you know, redeeming himself over the last few months, given his conduct in Iran, on the Iran war. But I think ultimately what we've seen here, and a few people have touched on it, is just his laissez-faire approach to domestic policy and most things. And the concept of I didn't know and I wasn't told, it may be factually correct, but it just highlights something that was true before this happened, that he's left so many decisions to others. And just because you didn't know, he's not a junior minister. He's not just an MP. Mm-hmm. He's a prime minister. And that, to me, is not a dereliction of duty, but it is proving incompetence or lack of competence, I think you'd called it earlier on, rather than, you know, him lying or anything else. Because I think he is a moral person, but it is lack of competence. And it boils down to him being a barrister and very process-driven, and that works very well in that world, but it doesn't seem to be working well in this world. And time again, we see that, and so I think his international policy and foreign policy has been very good recently. But this isn't a new issue. Yeah, this isn't a new issue.
Brilliant and question, you know, wasn't it, by Sam Coates, to talk about why does it often seem as if you're a passenger. It really cut to the heart of what you're saying as well, that idea that he's a victim of events rather than a driver of events. What if you're right about the rest of it, but you're not right about this? I'm keen to pin down, and I'm hoping Callum Miller will help us, whether or not it really is a binary yes or no that gets delivered to Downing Street over an appointment like this. Has he passed? Has due process been followed? And is it a tick or a cross at the end of it? And it is always just a tick or a cross, and that it is not reasonable to have expected Keir Starmer to have inquired further. So in all the
it's
other...
It's a political appointment. It's a political appointment. So, again, it's if he was one of the cabinet and just a sort of, you know, senior cabinet member, he could sort of wash his hands, but it's a very clear...
So it's like
move.
It's actually like Angela Rayner's mortgage. So yeah. It's not enough to have taken some advice and been given the green light. I mean, what they found her guilty of was not properly reflecting the seniority of her status, in that it's not enough just to ask one person. You need to have interrogated, to use your word, every level of this. But it's not good enough to just do this the normal way, to just deploy the old ministerial civil service rubber stamp. I need to know for a fact that this is not going to come back and bite us on the arse. Because for God's sake, lads, it's Peter Mandelson that we're talking about.
And it isn't new. It's got the Guardian revelation, this isn't new news, but it's new news from the Guardian. But, you know, you would have thought that the Prime Minister and his team would have been picking bit by bit every piece of the process.
Hold that thought. Right, because I wanted to double check that this was completely real before I introduced it into the conversation. 16th of September 2025, Emily Thornberry, chair of the Foreign Affairs Committee, writes to the Foreign Secretary, or to the Department of Foreign, Commonwealth and Development Affairs about the security vetting processes undertaken as part of Peter Mandelson's appointment. She wants answers. I'm not going to read you the whole letter, although I may need to in the course of the rest of this hour, but the crucial paragraph, or the crucial sentence, it seems to me, two sentences: the process is also independent of ministers who are not informed of any findings other than the final outcome. This remained the case in this instance. And then they attach a letter, an annex with specific answers to specific questions about which bits of the Foreign, Commonwealth and Development Office is responsible for those elements of the vetting process, something that I suspect we'll be seeing rather more of on Monday. But that double sentence there: the process is also independent of ministers who are not informed of any findings other than the final outcome. This remained the case in this instance. That is normal.
Sweeney is not a minister, and I can't, and we haven't talked about that, again, just mentioned very earlier on in the programme, but no one's really talked about Morgan McSweeney, and other than he'd lost his phone, as we know. But that, to me, is, not that I don't think Morgan McSweeney told Keir, may or not tell the Prime Minister, but at the end of the day, that just, again, is another I delegate everything moment.
It's not. I disagree on this, not on the previous examples that you provided, but only because of this letter. So it's not based, I mean, it is literally a letter signed by Yvette Cooper, the Foreign Secretary, and Oliver Robbins, the Permanent Undersecretary, that states this is what happened and this is what always happened. So, I think the point you make about it being a political appointment poses the question of whether or not they should have gone further than they do always, usually, whether or not they should have gone further than they needed to, and the answer to that retrospectively might be yes, but then, and in the moment, is this enough to go ahead? Then yes, obviously it is, because this is all that ever happens. We just get a yay or a nay.
His chief of staff may have been told by Ollie Robbins or somebody in the Foreign Office, and they just said, sure, and not told Keir Starmer. So I'm not saying Keir Starmer was told. I'm not saying that he, you know, is lying.
Well, then he hasn't really abnegated duty or responsibility on this occasion. I think you're right that he's done it in the past, and that's why I like the question about being a passenger. Yeah. But I think on this occasion he is going to be able to argue on Monday that he did follow due process.
I don't think that's good enough in for a Prime Minister to.
No,
to
I'm not sure
be,
I do either.
To leave it at arm's length, but yeah.
I'm not sure, but that seems to be what he's betting the house on, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
We shall see. Taz, we may talk again on Monday when we have... actually, it'll be Tuesday, won't it? Because I don't think he'll be delivering his statement to the House of Commons in time for us to pick over it on this programme, which is, when you think about it, dashed inconsiderate. Josh is in Chiswick. Josh, what do you reckon?
Hi there, James. Well, my thunder's been stolen by some previous excellent callers. I thought Taz was brilliant and Sanjay added sort of depth and nuance. My first question originally was, well, why didn't he ask?
Yeah.
It's not enough to not know. Why didn't he ask? And you should be buttoned up on this. And I appreciate he's the Prime Minister. At that level, you're going to get sort of executive summaries only, I would assume. Mm. But given that, you know, I can remember in the New Labour days, John Prescott holding up a crab and saying, this is my friend Peter. So, I mean, it's, you know, like...
miss John Prescott.
Oh, God, don't we just... But, like, but it's just like, you know he's dodgy, right? So you check in, you know? It's like, if you know someone, you're working with someone who's can be very good at their job, but be a little casual with the truth sometimes, you double check. right?
And, I agree.
And I think, you know, I voted for Starmer because why wouldn't you, given the shower that the Tories were? I'm probably to the left of centre. I'm not like a sort of screaming communist or anything. But, sure. You know, I have my reservations about him for that. But I thought he redeemed himself in the international sphere. But the thing is that, you know, I just think the Labour Party needs a bit of a reset. And you're going to ask me, well, who would it be? And the answer is, I don't know. But... I think, you know, that Sam Coates question about him being a passenger, and I know life is what happens when you're busy making other plans, but, you know, there does not really felt like a consistent narrative under Starmer's leadership.
And it just, every time you think that it's beginning to get better, something like this comes along. And was it Napoleon who talked about lucky generals? You need to have lucky generals. Probably apocryphal, but he, every single time you think he's beginning to turn things around, something like this comes along, doesn't it?
This is it, and the problem for me is, and you know, there's that book called The Fraud, which I haven't read yet, but I've sort of seen a lot of interviews around, and you know, McSweeney and them getting rid of the left and all of that kind of stuff. But I mean, there was that thing about the Ming vase, right? Don't say anything in the election campaign. You're carrying the Ming vase. You're trying to get it over the threshold. Yeah. Great, they did. Fantastic. Brilliant campaign. Huge landslide. I voted for him. Happy days. Issue is, when they set the Ming vase down, there was nothing in it.
What are we going to do now? Well, I'd pick you up on that, but that's a conversation for a different day. I think they've done a lot more than they get the credit for. And even this week, you're seeing some of the ramifications of that. Wes Streeting's announcements about the NHS, and we're looking at free school dinners, we're looking at increases in minimum wage and living wage, and there's a lot that they can stick on the CV. But equally, the narrative, I don't like that word, I'm using it too much, the picture that you've painted of what they look like from the outside is also accurate.
And I think that's the thing, and you're right to pick me up on that. That is me being unfair. Mm. But we live in a media world, we live in a social media world, especially. And their inability to not get that messaging out has been an absolute crime.
And they're getting a bit better. I mean, it's a really interesting point you make there, Josh, actually. I was chatting to a colleague this morning, not Eleanor, somebody else, about, I won't tell you who, you might be able to guess, but about a sort of a fairly prominent journalist who has become increasingly ridiculous since Brexit, like all of the people that supported it. But, of course, as Josh reminds us, we live in an ecosystem where there's no punishment or penalty for being hideously wrong about Brexit, hideously wrong about Boris Johnson, hideously wrong about Liz Truss, hideously wrong about austerity, and now hideously wrong about Donald Trump. You can have all five of those things on your CV and still be writing columns for every newspaper under the sun, presenting television programmes, and spouting your nonsense on the radio every day. But one in particular we were talking about, and I said, you know, since I came off Twitter, I just don't notice him anymore, or her. And it was quite odd, because one of the people that used to be very much front and centre in the increasingly unhinged attacks on the Keir Starmer movement in both opposition and government. But he's right. I mean, if you are on there, Kemi Badenoch obviously lives and breathes on Twitter. But if you're not on there anymore, it's extraordinary what ceases to matter and what begins to seem more important and all of these things. And it's a shame, because it shouldn't really matter. It's an entirely skewed and bogus platform that Elon Musk has quite deliberately engineered to promote white supremacists and people who lie about London, deeply treacherous and unpatriotic British voices attacking their own country, their own politicians, their own democracy, their own government. But it is unfortunately also, as with Facebook, the only place that some people get their news from. Brian has guessed correctly who I was talking about. But I just noticed now, Brian, you've actually had two guesses, and only one of them was correct, so I'm afraid you are disqualified.
LBC. What's the best present you ever got for your birthday? I bet it wasn't as life-changing as £1 million. Every week with the birthday draw, there's £1 million to be won, and you can enter from as little as £1, or via post. Enter by midnight on Sunday, and your special day could win you £1 million. Visit thebirthdaydraw.com. Is it your lucky day? From Global and ITV. 18 plus, UK only, no purchase necessary.
Lidl, we're giving you 50% off a fruit or veg item on your next shop. Just scan the Lidl Plus app at checkout, and when you scan, you'll be in with a chance to win your whole shop back. Open Lidl Plus and start saving today. Lidl, more to value. 18 plus GB residents, various prices available, subject to availability, ends 30th of 5th, 26. Full T's and C's apply. See lidl.co.uk/lp-terms.
Take Irish Ferries from Dover to Calais, where your pet travels in the pet lounge. You'll be barking not to. Irish Ferries. See travel differently.
You know what you're getting with a wedding? Wedding hats. A baby in a waistcoat crying throughout the vows. Themed tables. Awkward best man speech. The plus one.
Hello.
People dancing in a circle. Ruined rental suit. Sometimes in life you just know what you're getting, like a luxury bed and a great night's sleep. You know what you're getting with Premier Inn.
Hello, beautiful people! Get ready to rock with a new Volkswagen T-Roc. With £2,000 towards your finance deposit on the new Volkswagen T-Roc with Solutions PCP 7.9% APR representative. Test drive the T-Roc today and see why it won What Car's Best Small SUV Award.
Order by the 4th of May 2026. Indemnities may be required. Volkswagen Financial Services.
Dreaming of a new kitchen? Getting started couldn't be easier. At Wickes, you can begin planning your new kitchen with our design consultants. Simply arrange a free home measure or an in-store design consultation. Book your free kitchen design appointment and turn all your ideas into reality at Wickes.
James O'Brien on LBC.
It is 10 to 12. Callum Miller is the Liberal Democrat MP for Bicester and Woodstock, has been since 2024, but prior to that he was a civil servant and rose to the dizzy ranks of the Cabinet Office. It's chiefly, I suppose, for the purposes of the conversation that we're about to have, serving as Principal Private Secretary to Gus O'Donnell, who was the Cabinet Secretary, and latterly to Nick Clegg when he was Deputy Prime Minister. Callum, thanks for squeezing us in this morning. I'm sure that everything's very hectic in your world, but we should probably begin with developed vetting. You had it. You know what it is. Enlighten the rest of us.
Thanks for having me on, Jim. So developed vetting is one of the highest levels of security classification for somebody in the government, and it's put in place so that someone is really scrutinised before they're allowed to access top secret material. It's a really thorough process. It's actually a very invasive and, frankly, quite unpleasant one. You have to dredge back through your history, provide the government with all of the countries you've ever visited in the world, a whole series of your addresses throughout your lifetime. And they can take up to about 6 months to investigate this, to speak in depth to three people you knew. And then the most uncomfortable bit is, in my recollection, 2 to 2.5 hour-long interview where you're grilled on everything from whether or not you're financially solvent to whether or not you've had any sexual peccadilloes during your lifetime to how many drugs you've taken.
Flipping heck, I don't know where to start unpicking all of that. So Peter Mandelson went through that process. And
yeah, his interview might have been longer than 2.5 hours, I imagine. But yes, he certainly went through.
And the conclusion arrived at was that he was not fit for developed vetting status.
That's right. So developed vetting is carried out by an agency of the Cabinet Office, staffed by experienced investigators, maybe with a background in the police or the intelligence services, and they draw up a report and pass that on to the relevant department, who's hoping that their staff member will be given developed vetting. And what we understand now is that Peter Mandelson was recommended not to receive developed vetting.
Wow. Have you ever heard previously of that decision being overruled?
I have never.
I think you've identified three possible scenarios that would account for what happened next. Shall we run through them?
Of course.
Scenario number one, number 10 is leaning on the Foreign Office to the point where the Foreign Office sort of obeyed in advance.
Yes. So what we know is that the Prime Minister announced Peter Mandelson would be the ambassador on the 20th of December. And the process then appears to have started of his developed vetting, all in a great rush to get him out to Washington by February. And at some point in that process, the answer comes back to the Foreign Office to say, actually, he's not passed developed vetting. And this is a scenario where the Foreign Office internalises the instruction from number 10, a political instruction, and decides not to tell anybody that that's happened and find a way to adjust the approval and give him his develop vetting nonetheless. And the big problem with that is that, you know, I need to emphasise, this is really important national security stuff. You know, it's a big deal to overrule a develop vetting. So you've got a situation here. The Prime Minister today says he's furious that he didn't know. But, you know, if it's that serious and that important, it seems incredible that very senior officials in the Foreign Office would have been too scared to whisper to number 10 that there was a problem with the process.
Although it looks like that is the position that the Prime Minister is going to defend on Monday and has started defending today, only time will tell whether it actually is. Before we move on to scenario two, under scenario one, your reservations and misgivings notwithstanding, it would be normal practice for the ministers or the Prime Minister to simply be given the result, the yay or the nay, and that would be the end of the matter. There's no precedent or tradition of Prime Minister saying, all right, prove it, for example, prove that they've passed.
Like, I believe that's true, James, but right. I think the thing we need to emphasise is this is exceptionally unusual.
Yeah.
It's one thing that people are probably not aware is that ministers don't go through develop vetting. This is only applied to civil servants. So ministers are expected by dint of their election and by dint, in many cases, of being what's called a privy councillor, to be trustworthy and therefore to receive this information. It's only civil servants who go through the process. And what happened in the period between the political appointment in December and Peter Mandelson moving into his residence in February was that he became a civil servant because he was an ambassador. And so what this period in January when he was going through develop vetting was a period when he was being treated like a civil servant. And frankly, if a civil servant, another ambassador in the world, was not passed through their develop vetting, no one would tell a minister. They would just not get the job, and right. It would be an HR matter within the Foreign Office. So when people say this is the precedent, I think it's very unlikely that there are many precedents at all, because it's such an unusual situation. The last explicitly political ambassadorial appointment I can think of is maybe Helen Liddell to be the High Commissioner in Australia, and way back when Peter Jay by Jim Callaghan to go to Washington. But you need to go back into these precedents to understand whether or not there were any likelihood of this information being shared with the minister.
So scenario two then would be that they did tell somebody at number 10, and got the, not Keir Starmer, under scenario two, someone at number 10 got told and sent the Foreign Office Mandarin away with a flea in their ear and told them to fix it.
And I think that's a very plausible likelihood. Whether it was over WhatsApp, whether it was through a phone call, one would assume that number 10 believe there's no documentary evidence and therefore they can maintain the line that they're taking today. But I think it's much more likely that somebody in the Foreign Office did pick up the phone or have a quiet word with somebody in number 10 to say, look, we've got a problem here, and was told that that problem needed to disappear.
Did Morgan McSweeney's missing phone suddenly rear its mysterious head? I wonder, but I won't ask you to answer that question, because scenario three, of course, the worst possible scenario from the Prime Minister's point of view, is that Starmer was told, and it was him that sent the Foreign Office Mandarin away with a flea in their ear and instructions to, in the words of Jean-Luc Picard, make it so.
That's right. And I've got no evidence for that, and clearly the Prime Minister has flatly denied it. However, I don't think the fact that he's flatly denied it fully gets him off the hook in terms of where we are in Parliament. He repeatedly said at Prime Minister's questions that the full process had been followed. He's now stating that he was misled or not informed prior to that. But it still stands that he said the full process had been followed and it hadn't been. And what that gets to is whether we're under scenario one, scenario two or scenario three, something is rotten at the heart of the government's approach to this, because the Prime Minister is protesting today that he should have known about these things, and I agree with him. But for whatever reason, he didn't know about them under his account, and that means he's created either a culture of fear or a culture where the political writ runs ahead of the national security interest, and the political imperative overrode any concerns about Peter Mandelson handling top secret material.
But your party position, the Liberal Democrat position, your leader calling for the Privileges Committee to investigate further whether the Prime Minister misled Parliament, that call doesn't really get affected by anything that does or doesn't happen on Monday.
Well, look, let's see where we are by Monday. There's obviously, this is moving by the hour. I think the Prime Minister has given his first statement in the last hour or so. We will see where we are, but I think it's a very grave situation for the Prime Minister. And, you know, it might well be that there's considerable pressure on him on Monday to consider his position.
So, a final question. I mean, even if he were to prove beyond reasonable doubt on Monday that he had no idea that Mandelson had failed developed vetting, that may not be enough to save his skin.
I think he's got some very big questions to answer. The conclusion of either of the first two scenarios is that number 10 set a culture where the political importance of an outcome, in this case Peter Mandelson's appointment, was more important than national security. And just to emphasise, James, you know, top secret material could be material that relates to national defence installations, that is actually intelligence material where the lives of those who provided the information can be put at risk if it was shared in the wrong way.
Yeah.
And we all knew that Peter Mandelson was someone who wasn't really to be trusted. We've learned more subsequently about Jeffrey Epstein and his relationship with him and information that he shared with him under Gordon Brown's prime ministership. But, you know, that is a really deep concern. And even if Keir Starmer wasn't told that he failed the vetting process, the very fact that he allowed the political imperative to override the national security one is a very serious charge.
Indeed it is. Any chance that a fourth scenario might emerge over the course of the weekend, or are you fairly confident that you've got all the bases covered?
I'll keep scratching my head.
Callum Miller, thank you very much indeed, the Liberal Democrat MP for Bicester and Woodstock and the party spokesperson for Foreign Affairs. And as I think he demonstrated pretty conclusively there, extremely well qualified to comment on precisely the moment that we have been examining all morning, and which, unless something remarkable happens in the next news bulletin, we'll probably continue to examine after this.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at midday, Sir Keir Starmer says it's staggering that he wasn't told Lord Mandelson failed his security vetting for the job of US ambassador. The peer was denied clearance in early 2025, but the Foreign Office overruled the report so he could take the job. The Prime Minister says he's absolutely furious and will update MPs in Parliament next week.
It is totally unacceptable that the Prime Minister making an appointment is not told that security vetting has been failed. Totally unacceptable. I was not told that security vetting had failed. That is shocking. It is unacceptable. And I intend to set out the full facts to Parliament on Monday.
Following the developments, the top civil servant in charge of the Foreign Office, Sir Ollie Robbins, has left his post. But Scotland's First Minister, John Swinney, has told LBC News it's staggering incompetence from the Prime Minister.
He's asking us to believe that he only found out this week that Peter Mandelson had failed his vetting process. And the issue's been rumbling on for months. He should have satisfied himself the minute the issue was raised months ago about what the vetting arrangements were. He's obviously made no attempt to do that if he has just now found out about the failure of the vetting process.
In other news this lunchtime, Kensington Gardens in central London has been closed for the day due to an ongoing police investigation. Officers are said to be assessing a number of discarded items, with some wearing protective clothing. The Met Police has stressed, though, there's no threat to the wider public, but people should avoid the area until further notice. The force's Deputy Commissioner, Matt Jukes, has given this update to LBC.
Counter-terrorism policing London are aware of a video shared online overnight in which a group claim to have targeted the nearby embassy of Israel with drones carrying dangerous substances. And whilst we can confirm that the embassy has not been attacked, we're carrying out urgent inquiries to determine the authenticity of the video and to identify any potential link between it and the items discarded in Kensington Gardens.
LBC will have more on this developing story throughout today. And the total cost of compensating victims of major scandals, including Windrush and infected blood, could reach £15 billion. A report by the spending watchdog says less than a quarter has been paid so far, with many victims still facing long waits. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down 21 at 10,568. The pound buys $1.35 and €1.14. LBC weather, a band of rain will spread eastwards across much of the UK through today. The southeast staying dry, a high of 16 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
With an Amex business card, Selena's earning points renovating her skin clinic and refreshing the builders.
14 coffees and 28 sugars, please.
And on new adjustable chairs for every room. And she can use the points to lie back and run.
Don't put ice cream on your brother's head.
Well, Sometimes. And that's because with an Amex business card, your points can go towards holidays and more.
Search Amex business card. Interest fees and terms apply. Available to UK limited companies and limited liability partnerships. Signatories must be a director or member of the business. Subject to approval.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Minutes after 12 is the time. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. If I read you the first line of a message that says you are promoting, dear James, you are promoting a utopian view of the world, what do you think would follow after that opener? I shall probably share that with you a little bit later in the programme. But a couple of texts just to reset the conversation that we're having about the Prime Minister's imperiled situation. Fred in Guildford: Starmer chose the people who supposedly let him down, whether it's McSweeney, Mandelson, Doyle, Gray, Rayner, Lyons. Some of these names I don't recognise, Fred. You're paying more attention than I am. At some point, he needs to take responsibility. That is, I think, an emerging theme, or rather a crystallising, a strengthening theme. For how long can you say it wasn't my fault? It wasn't me, to paraphrase Shaggy. Although I've been listening more this week to Shabba Ranks than Shaggy, just by way of an aside. No, more tingling, actually, more than Love and Man. If you want to hold him accountable, fine, right, Stuart, but that's politics. But accountability is not the same as self-sabotage. A resignation now would hand opponents the narrative, it would fracture the party, and it would stall every major policy, which, of course, is why they are doing it. It's not because they hate Mandelson. You can debate his decisions all day, but the idea that resigning magically fixes anything is fantasy politics. Stability isn't weakness, it's the minimum requirement for governing. And that speaks also to the utopian accusation that I face from Lezek, who writes, "You are, James O'Brien, you are promoting a utopian view of the world where everybody should be checking everything about everybody because somebody might have wanted to sabotage the reality. This is a nonsense. If anything, the whole problem revealed that Starmer trusted fully his government and trusted the system. If you spend a little bit more time thinking about advocating, you would have to start checking the credentials of the electricians that are created before you can broadcast in your radio studio and feel that you fully trust them. Of course, this is an absurd expectation." Well, you say that. How do you know I haven't checked all their credentials, or at least got Keith to? But then have I checked Keith's I take your point. You can't double-check everything. That was sent... Oh, no, 12.02. I was going to say that was sent before we spoke to Callum Miller, who one of the best guests we've had, actually. We've had two politicians on in the last 3 months who've been absolutely brilliant, and they both have names that sound similar. One's called Callum and one's called Calvin. There you go. I don't know what you read into that, but if you're thinking of names for a recently born son, then I would recommend names that begin with the three letters Cal. It was Calvin Bailey who talked us through the Chilcot checklist in the most magnificent fashion when everybody else was still advocating for Keir Starmer to jump into Donald Trump's back pocket, the MP for Leighton and Wanstead. And it was Callum Miller today, the Liberal Democrat for Bicester, who has talked us through, and the foreign affairs spokesman for that party, talked us through what developed vetting really is and how plausible the Prime Minister's defence is and whether the plausibility even matters given the likelihood of what has unfolded. So both Stuart and Leszek then arguing that the pragmatism of the moment overweighs the principle. So even if Starmer has very big questions to answer, and even if you would be calling for his resignation if everything was hunky-dory, I love the way we've circled back through three or four different questions that have changed in volume and importance as the events have changed slightly in the course of the show. Because we've moved through now, okay, he didn't know. That seems to be the widely accepted scenario. Still some questions over who did know, but Starmer didn't know. Probably not enough to get him completely off the hook, but roll on Monday. And we circle back to that other question then of whether or not the pragmatism actually in this moment outweighs the principle. It's all very well, and this is why the word utopian was so apposite in that text, it's all very well wanting this and wanting that, But in the real world, you can't triple check and double check everything. In the real world, Keir Starmer is currently providing global leadership in the face of Donald Trump's insane adventures in Iran. And to remove him from his post or to hound him out of this post at this moment would be a matter not only of national jeopardy, but international jeopardy as well. And I can see some mileage in that, albeit it's at slightly, or if not completely at odds with where I've been since 10 o'clock. But we're also, are we veering into don't let the perfect be the enemy of the good territory? Or are we seeing scales that have now tipped so far away from approval of Keir Starmer that they have to hand him his sandwiches wrapped in a roadmap too sweet? The situation that we currently face, domestically and internationally, means that Keir Starmer will persuade himself over the course of the weekend that, albeit that there are circumstances in which he could imagine resigning over what has happened, these are not those circumstances. And the national interest is served by him staying in post. Just imagining the internal dialogue that Keir Starmer has. Look, if everything was hunky-dory, if the economy was ticking along quite nicely, if the madman in the White House hadn't started yet another war and then pretended that he hadn't, if we weren't looking at instability across the markets, if the Strait of Hormuz was as open as it was before the madman in the White House started another war and then pretended that he hadn't, if all things were equal, then I would probably resign over this. But everything is such a mess that I can't. Let's add that to the mix and tell me how much sympathy you have for that argument. Because I am utopian and I am the idealistic. I really am. And I don't want to compromise that, and I don't want to prioritise pragmatism over principle. I cannot conceive of a completely compelling explanation for why Keir Starmer didn't ask to see every single dot on every single I and every single cross on every single T over an appointment of a man proven to be political gelignite that blows up in the face repeatedly of the prime ministers who have promoted him. How on earth did the great pragmatist, the great king of process, end up fast-tracking the appointment of political and diplomatic gelignite? That's the bit that's extraordinary to me. But whether or not it is an act extraordinary or egregious enough to merit his departure at a time of international and national jeopardy, I don't know. I honestly don't know. I need you to tell me. 0345 60 60 973 is the number that you need. Should we be looking at circumstances surrounding these events in a way that allows the gravity and the importance of the events to be somewhat diluted? I'd love to hear your answer to that question, but of course we're still canvassing your answers to previous ones as well. To wit, Stuart is in Harrogate. Stuart, what would you like to say?
Thank you very much for taking the call, James. I thoroughly enjoyed Callum Miller's contribution.
Great, wasn't it?
And if he was this, it was fantastic. And if he was the sublime, I only hope I'm not the ridiculous.
I've got that covered. Don't you worry.
Thank you very much. Well, you're talking about the circumstances, about what has happened.
Yeah.
I have some skin in the game to the extent that I am a lawyer. Well, I was a lawyer. I'm retired now. But I went to the same university and did the same course as Keir Starmer and have taken an interest in his career throughout.
Okay, of course.
And it's one of sadness and disappointment at the moment at another unforced error.
Yeah.
And it got me thinking back to the circumstances that he inherited in terms of the diplomats that they had in Washington when he was elected. And, of course, there was a very highly respected ambassador in Dame Karen Pierce, who had served the country throughout the first term of Donald Trump, which would have been no mean achievement on its own, and, you know, was highly regarded both in Washington and in the Foreign Office.
Mm.
And what I can't understand is why didn't she make the cut when she had all the credentials for diplomacy in a professional to a professional extent. She'd got a proven record of getting on with Donald Trump, whether that's a pro or an anti. We all know what that, well, I don't know what it is, but she
sure
had the appropriate communication. And it then goes to the extent as to what benefits did she have over somebody, as you said, is political gelignite. And it's very hard, I find, not to exclude political expediency in relation to the activities of Mr. McSweeney. And, you know, those are the things that really disappoint. And you wonder, it's another unforced error, which have dominated, unfortunately, this prime minister.
Yeah.
And I absolutely agree with you that in terms of his standing at the moment, by virtue of the stance he's taken against Trump's war, it is very, very difficult to actually understand what and how we get out of this. But I think he will. I hope he doesn't go.
Do you?
But I suspect it may well be that circumstances will dictate that he has to go.
It may become
and I thought
untenable.
It was interesting talking about the future, and you know, it's not going to do him any good at all in terms of the elections that are coming up, and the idea that perhaps he'll stay on throughout the summer and
until they're over.
Hope that,
yeah,
until they're over, exactly. And that's the view. But those are the points that are dominating my thinking at the moment.
And some of those questions probably will be answered. Jettisoning, the defenestration, if you like, of Dame Karen Pierce, the previous ambassador to whom you prefer, may well emerge as a consequence of the already underway investigations into the nature of the appointment and what actually happened. And if I were to put 50p on it, I'd say that pressure was brought to bear upon Downing Street to appoint Mandelson either by Donald Trump or Tony Blair or both. And that he kind of acquiesced, which doesn't do him any favours, but it does at least provide the consolation of explanation. And again, we're doing that thing, aren't we, where you're not, but everybody else is pretending that they weren't cheering the appointment of Peter Mandelson to the rafters, which they were, right across the political landscape. And I certainly didn't call it out in a way that I wish I had done and probably should have done, but everybody else was saying that it was a brilliant appointment as well. So when we say political expediency, as you just did, with a certain timbre, it's changed from being a brilliant idea, albeit politically expedient, to being a terrible idea that was politically expedient. It's a weird one, that. It's a really weird one. And the other weird thing today, and you've just done it as well, is I've had such quality callers that almost all of them have provided brilliant analysis of what is going on, really interesting insights and thoughts. But until you've actually told me specifically and explicitly whether you think he should stay or should go, I haven't been able to call it. That's how confusing and complex this situation is.
Well, it's going to be extremely interesting what Monday brings, obviously.
Yeah, it really is. Because, I mean, every argument for him to go is powerful and compelling. Every argument for him to stay. What have you relied on ultimately, then? Not vibes, but what, the national interest? You're thinking about the bigger picture? What is the reason why you recognise all of the awfulness of much of what has happened, but you still don't want him to walk the plank?
Well, the reason I'm saying this is that what we need at the moment is some form of stability. And I suppose what dominates my own personal position is, I have family in Dubai at the moment, and those are matters that do,
of course,
shall we say, dominate your thinking.
So you want that business to be over as soon and as peacefully as possible?
Correct.
Can't really argue with that, and that would probably involve wanting Keir Starmer to stay in the job for the foreseeable. I see why, albeit it may not be a massive game changer in the context of what Trump and Netanyahu are up to. It's probably better than any of the immediately obvious alternatives. Stuart, what a great call. Amazing calls today. Quite a few people commenting on that, but if you're new to the programme, that's pretty much par for the course over here. LBC.
Need anything from Tesco? Like a Nestle Milky Bar 2-pack dessert. Now just 75p, down from £2.
Club card accepted.
Because every little helps. Majority of larger stores ends 21st of April. Club card or app required.
I've just had a thought. My home needs to feel less student with one teaspoon and more a home that actually feels like me.
Sounds like a job for Wayfair.
Exactly. I'm thinking of that one statement piece that changes the whole room, or maybe just those perfect finishing touches that pull it all together.
With furniture and decor for every style and budget, Wayfair turns your home dreams into reality. So why wait to create the home you really love? Get it out of your head and into your home Download the Wayfair app.
It's that summer escape kind of feeling. As everyone finds their happy place. A celebratory drink. A taste of something new. A quiet retreat to the lounge. Because with P&O Ferries, that holiday feeling doesn't wait until you arrive. It starts the moment you step on board. P&O Ferries from Dover to Calais. Summer's calling. Book now at poferries.com. Travel without the travel.
This is LBC.
With Vauxhall. Proud partner of Team GB.
It's 12:18. I think I've got an idiot's corner for you, which is somewhat odd given the calibre of contributions today, but there is always one, and I will hopefully remember to share that with you shortly. The question really of whether or not the bigger picture justifies the, what would the word be, the pass for Starmer over this. So working on the principle or the presumption that he genuinely didn't know, impossible, I would say, not just hard, impossible to defend the idea that that doesn't matter. He should have known, but he didn't. And we'll find out more about that on Monday. If you were assembling your position on this in a time of absolute peace and harmony, for which you'd probably have to go back to 2007, in relative political terms, but you would call for him to go, but you don't think he should go now because of the bigger picture, either domestically or internationally or both. How much mileage does that argument have? Because I suspect if Keir Starmer girds his loins over the weekend and persuades himself to duke this out, it will be a combination of I did not know and I cannot go. And I wonder whether that butters any of your parsnips this morning. Tony's in Greenock. Tony, what would you like to say?
Yeah, hi, James. Thank you for taking my call. I hope I don't break your streak of excellent callers today.
I'm sure you won't. Don't you worry.
You've got me nervous now. I'm quite excited because this is an area... I never thought I'd speak about what I do for a job as an area of something that relates to the political conversation. I mean, I work in controls assurance, and for me, you know, every day you speak to people about processes and the assurance that they've got that process has been completed properly. And I think if you look at it in this context, the process is a well-established one. People have said that. It's something that this is traditionally what happens. So you're looking for where's your evidence of your control being exercised here?
Yes, yes.
And what Starmer has done is said, well, basically, the process was this. This process was followed, and this is the information that I was given. That's the control evidence I need to make sure that the decision I make is the right one. So in the context of what normally the process is, you can say, if this indeed is true, then you could say, yes, the process was followed properly. The information was given to him that he needed to get to make the decision. But this wasn't a normal process. No. This was Peter Mandelson. This was the US ambassador role. This was a high-profile, high-visibility role being given to somebody who they know is just a lit fuse waiting to explode, really. So for me, yes, you can say I was following the process, but he should attach risk to that and say that this is a very high-risk decision I'm making, so I need to know with certainty that all the right boxes have been ticked down the process.
I've really enjoyed today's show, I have to be honest, because my levels of interest are increasing on some areas of the conversation as it continues, rather than levelling off or decreasing, because... I mean, 2020 hindsight, mate. Everybody thought the Mandelson appointment was brilliant precisely because he was so dodgy. And now we're all sitting here, me and you included, I'm not singling you out on this one, and saying how mad was it, how stupid was it of them to not go an extra mile in analytics. He got the job because he's dodgy. So to now say we should have worked harder to stop him getting the job because he's dodgy it's a bit contradictory almost.
I was never. I've been never a fan of the appointment in the first place.
But you accept that the world and his wife were.
The political discourse was yes. It, well, what a great appointment. But yeah, I mean, in that situation, you have to make sure that the process that is followed to get him across the line has been done properly, and that every part of that process, there's evidence to support the decision that's being made. And in this case, there's a very large chunk of the evidence is missing down the line. Now, yeah. Starmer will argue that that wasn't my job to know that. I rely on the people telling me that's the case. I would counter-argue that by saying, for a decision like this, you should have checked and balanced. You do a risk assessment of the appointment, and then you check that the process is...
Well, you do. I mean, and Callum Miller's contribution to the programme has kind of challenged elements of this conclusion, but... Because he talks about there are no real precedents. So there are precedents for appointing an ambassador, right? And when an ambassador is appointed and Downing Street is told that they have passed the process, there is no precedent for then going back for more. But because it was Peter Mandelson, we are all now saying, well, then they should have gone back for more. Precedents don't matter because there's no precedent for a political appointment of this sort of nature. And there's certainly no precedent for appointing to this role somebody who's had to resign from two previous senior roles in Labour administrations over questions of integrity and probity. So all of those things are true, but I can't get past the point, and albeit you're not on the hook for this, but I'm afraid I am, you can't get past the point that everybody thought the fact that he is dodgy was a brilliant reason to send him to be Donald Trump's ambassador, or the ambassador to Donald Trump. Mm. Oh, boy. Do you want to have a crack at this question from Anthony, given your background, Tony, and the quality of your contribution?
Well, thank you very much.
Anthony got in touch 1.5 minutes ago, so just while you were in your pomp, and he said, I'm still waiting for someone to tell me what Starmer did wrong.
I think in the normal scheme of things, he's relied on the checks and balances that are in place for him to reach the decision he's relied on all the parts of the process working properly.
It's not exactly a smoking gun, is it? It's not living at the address that breached more COVID laws than any other address in the country.
It's what gets him off the hook, I think, this is what we normally do. But then you have to make it... My argument is you have to make an exception for this.
Because it's Mandelson.
Because it's Mandelson. Yeah. Because it's high profile, yeah.
This is I love the way that this focus is zoning in on this wonderful conundrum that they should have worked harder to process the appointment because it's Peter Mandelson and he's so dodgy, but the appointment was made because it's Peter Mandelson and he's so dodgy, and boom, that's it, everything blows up. It's like a kind of, it's like the streams crossing in Ghostbusters, isn't it? Once that happens, you can't... Tony can sustain that position because he didn't think Mandelson should have got the job in the first place. But everybody who said, oh, it's great that they've given him the job because he's so dodgy, can't really in all good conscience now say, I can't believe they gave him the job without triple checking everything because he's so dodgy. That doesn't happen very often, where you talk about a big, big story from loads of different angles with loads of different callers and contributions, and they all ultimately lead to the same Gordian knot, the same unravelable conundrum, which is the reason why he got the job is the reason why he shouldn't have got it. And that is the hook upon which Keir Starmer finds himself hanging this weekend. Tony, great stuff. Thank you. Alan is in Kendal. It's a few miles south. Alan, what would you like to say?
Oh, good afternoon.
Hello.
I've just finished reading Get In by a couple of Sunday Times journalists, and I'm embarking on Paul Holden's amazing book, The Fraud. And anybody who wants to understand where this is all coming from needs to read those books, because... Morgan McSweeney was Mandelson's protege, and those two, with Keir Starmer and a few others, were the brains behind Labour Together. And this whole thing goes back to that relationship of the three of them. Starmer wanted Mandelson. He wasn't bothered about the vetting. He appointed him before having him vetted, which strikes me as weird. But
no, that's completely normal.
Well, it's not in any other sphere of activity. When you vet people before you give them the job,
it takes 6 months. So you make your decision about who you want, and then the vetting kicks right, in. Presumably. I don't know. Maybe you're right. Maybe they've done it the wrong way around.
I probably misunderstand that, but I don't...
Maybe I have. Maybe they're vetting everybody all the time.
But the other thing is that this notion that we have to hang on to Starmer because of what a grand job he's doing in Iran, I was about to use an exceedingly rude word there, but it's nonsense. Because he's not doing a great job. He found a way of being involved in that war without being involved in that war.
Why is Donald Trump so angry with him?
Donald Trump's angry with anybody who...
He's singled Keir Starmer out for particular abuse and approbation. Why do you think that is?
Because he wouldn't commit himself 100% to an offensive war.
No, he's followed the Chilcot checklist at every turn.
But he hasn't.
And obeyed international law in a way that Donald Trump has failed to do. I have very little patience. Your capacious reading habits notwithstanding, I have very, very little patience with the argument that Keir Starmer has somehow finagled on this or become complicit in what Donald Trump has done. He's explained at every turn his reasoning for allowing our air bases to be used for very certain and specific activities while not allowing them to be used for obviously illegal activities. And it's deeply disingenuous of you to pretend that you don't understand that.
I do understand that, and I do understand...
So why are you pretending that you don't know?
I do understand the offensive capacity of a B-1 bomber and a B-52 bomber. You cannot launch those bombers from Swindon to go to Iran carrying 24 2,000-pound bombs...
When did you stop serving?
And, pardon?
When did you finish your service in the RAF?
Well, I was brought up in the RAF, and I finished...
That's not what
in
I
RAF.
Asked.
I finished my Royal Air Force service at the age of 19 in 1967.
And how many B-1s were in action then?
B-1s were built after that. The B-52s were there and they were used in Vietnam.
So you don't know what you're talking about when it comes to what Keir Starmer has and hasn't given permission for in the context of this particular activity.
He's given permission for very heavy bombers to fly from Swindon to Iran.
And he's explained at every turn what they will and will not be doing, and he'll be held to account under the auspices of international law and all the rest of it all the time. I'm being rude to you, and I'm sorry. It's not fair. I'm sorry. I've been rude to you. It's 12:30.
That's fine, James.
It's not fine. I shouldn't be rude. I just think that Starmer has really carefully plotted a course here. And the thing that people arguing from the position that you're in can't do is explain fairly why Donald Trump is so furious with him if what he's done is actually complicit in Donald Trump's war.
Do you believe that the Americans are giving us details of where those bombs are going? Those American pilots in those B-1
bombs? Yeah, I do.
Well, I don't.
No, and that's fine. And you might be right and I might be right. But to steer you back to the phone-in that everybody else has been having today, Alan, do you think that this particular issue should do for him as Prime Minister?
Absolutely, because there have been so many others.
It's an accumulation of problems.
Yes.
I'd asked you on Friday, and I want you to tell me honestly, if I'd asked you last Friday whether you felt that Keir Starmer should resign, would you have said yes then?
I would.
Yeah, I thought so. And there we are. I mean, that's where we began the phone in, by saying that those are perhaps, and this is not a personal affront to you, that these are perhaps the least helpful contributions to a conversation about what has emerged in the last 24 hours. If you're going to stick up for Keir Starmer, whatever happens, or if you're going to call for Keir Starmer's resignation, whatever happens, then the events of the last 24 hours, and I don't want to misrepresent you, they are irrelevant to your opinion.
Keir Starmer is sitting on a pile of Jenga with the last piece hanging on by the skin of its teeth, and it's being pulled out. And that pile of Jenga
has
been built up.
Yeah.
No,
you might well be right. You might well be. It might be the only piece that matters. And thank you for your good grace in accepting my apology for my short temper. It is 12:31 and Matt Hewitt has your headlines.
The Prime Minister says it's unforgivable that he wasn't told that Lord Mandelson had failed his security vetting. A decision to deny the peer clearance to become an ambassador last year was overturned. Sir Keir Starmer was speaking from Paris, where the UK and France are holding joint talks to discuss the future of the Strait of Hormuz. Discussions will focus on how the key waterway can be kept open after the Iran war ends, but the US, Israel and Iran are not expected to attend. And a security incident near the Israeli embassy in London is being investigated by the police. Officers wearing protective clothing have been deployed to examine several discarded items, but we're told there's no threat to the wider public. LBC weather. A band of rain will spread eastwards across much of the UK. The southeast will stay dry, highs of 16 degrees.
This is LBC.
Oh, you want weight loss advice?
Weight loss? Actually, what you want to do is...
I got my weight loss secret from my mother, who got it from her mother's
weight loss?
I... No, forget that.
Never,
you
just keep dancing.
Dragon fruit.
Podcast.
Advice.
Or you could go to MedExpress. MedExpress. Healthcare without the noise. Go to medexpress.co.uk/weightloss.
Ali 60 milligram hard capsules contain orlistat for overweight adults with a BMI of 28 plus. Follow a reduced calorie, low fat diet. Always read the label.
Dreaming of a new kitchen? Getting started couldn't be easier. At Wix, you can begin planning your new kitchen with our design consultants. Simply arrange a free home measure or an in-store design consultation. Book your free kitchen design appointment and turn all your ideas into reality at Wix.
With an Amex business card, Selena's earning points renovating her skin clinic and refreshing the builders.
14 coffees and 28 sugars, please.
And on new adjustable chairs for every room. And she can use the points to lie back and relax.
Don't put ice cream on your brother's head.
Well, sometimes. And that's because with an Amex business card, your points can go towards holidays and more.
Search Amex business card. Interest fees and terms apply. Available to UK limited companies and limited liability partnerships. Signatories must be a director or member of the business. Subject to approval.
At Pets in a Pickle, we're here when it matters most. For fuss-free pet insurance policies as unique as they are. Visit petsinapickle.co.uk.
Do you ever feel like getting back under your duvet in the middle of the day? Ferroglobin is a great-tasting liquid formula with iron, which contributes to the reduction of tiredness and fatigue and normal formation of haemoglobin. Ferroglobin from Vitabiotics at Boots, pharmacies and vitabiotics.com.
This is LBC.
With Vauxhall. Energising a better Britain.
It is 12:34. You are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. There you go. I mean, that's actually brilliant. Came in at 12:22. I'm waiting for someone to tell me what Starmer did wrong, writes Anthony. Well, he appointed someone to the ambassadorship who had failed security vetting. But he didn't know that he'd failed security vetting. Because nobody told him. Well, they should have told, yeah, but they did. So what's he done wrong? He's not asked people to prove that Peter Mandelson had passed the vetting when he was told that he had passed the vetting. Well, does any Prime Minister ever ask for proof that a vetting process has been such a... No, not previously, but he should have done in this case because Mandelson's such a dodgy character. Why did he appoint Peter Mandelson to the ambassadorship? Because Mandelson's such a dodgy character. And I can't... I mean, that's just... It's close to perfect, isn't it? But I think I've gone back from 51:49 to 52:48. I don't think he will go on Monday, but I think he should. I'm afraid that for me, this is an accumulation of events, not the same events that our last caller, Alan, cited, but enough events on my personal Jenga board, particularly the thing I began with at 10 o'clock this morning, which was that the process was the thing. The thing you could rely on him for, international law and due process. And international law, he has, I think, upheld, well, I mean, he has upheld quite spectacularly in extraordinarily difficult circumstances. Hence my impatience with Alan in Kendal a moment ago. The idea that you don't fully appreciate how hard it is for a UK Prime Minister to be publicly and viciously subjected to ad hominem attacks from the President of the United States of America, and to just be resolute, to let it wash over you, like not quite water off a duck's back, but to be clear that you ain't going to be bullied and you ain't going to be swayed and you ain't going to sacrifice the national interest on the altar of Donald Trump's narcissism. That takes some real cojones. You show me another politician in the UK at the moment that would do that. All right. Ed Davey. But seriously, And by politician, I mean somebody with experience, somebody with a seat in the House of Commons, somebody likely to become Prime Minister, to actually, and someone with a proper understanding of the facts. You can imagine Badenoch or Farage telling Donald Trump to sling his hook, and then carrying on to tell him to sling his hook long after Donald Trump has exposed them to all sorts of abuses, often in cahoots with the British media. It takes some real guts, that, some real backbone, which is what we wanted when Keir Starmer became Prime Minister. But the other side of that coin, the only coin left in his treasury, that was process. That was doing things right, transparently. And he hasn't. And even if it's not his fault, it's probably enough to do for him. And I'm still of the view that it should be. That's how let down I personally feel. Although I'm, you know, by no means speaking for everybody. Kevin writes, we're at war, Jimbo. We don't have the luxury... That takes me back. We don't have the luxury of fighting the enemy or of moral perfection. Is it perfect? Absolutely not. But sometimes you've got to do what's right for the greater good. You could be talking about anything there. You could be talking about the appointment of Peter Mandelson, or you could be talking about the argument that he should stay in his job for the time being, which I'm afraid I'm not persuaded by. Although our first idiot's corner of the day, Stephen Guildford, has listened to the same programme that you've listened to and sent this message. Your pathetic defending, no prizes for guessing how he spelt your pathetic defending, a pathetic excuse for a prime minister is laughable. I'm not defending him, mate. I'm suggesting that he probably should walk the plank on Monday. I'm explaining the reasons why he might not, and inviting people to tell me why they think that he should. But hey-ho, Steve, on we go. Lawrence is in Watford. Lawrence, what would you like to say?
Oh, hiya, James. This is my second call, I think, to your show. Top man,
you don't have to keep count. Well, crikey, so what? We've got a 10-year gap, have we, between the first call and the second?
It's been a while, and I was so disappointed with Brexit, I couldn't find you again.
Yeah, all right. I know what you mean. I didn't have that option, unfortunately. I had to keep talking.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and you're a sane voice in the mad world.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'm an IT, or was an IT program manager, and worked on a number of major programs for government as well as national industries. You know.
Okay.
So I've been through the vetting process, and I've actually employed people through the vetting process, or rather asked them to be vetted. And when that paperwork comes across my desk, I make sure that it's all approved and it's clear to go. Now, I don't necessarily go into the level of detail of looking at each and every line item. These have been approved by the process, and as far as I'm concerned, the people that are carrying out that process have cleared him, and he's good to go. Now, if he commits some sort of security incident during the time at work, then of course I would take action, and he would go immediately, which is what I think Starmer has done in this instance. And I can guarantee you that I was running programs and projects for maybe up to 100 people. Under my auspices, and they would be trusted by me to do the right thing, but I have to take it on face value that the person that's been vetted has been approved, gone through the due diligence and the process, and therefore can work on the program.
Yeah. What else can you do? What else can you do? You say, show me the money, show me your workings, bring me the head of, John the Baptist, whatever it is. I mean, the argument that's put forward, and no one's going to put it forward better than Callum Miller did on this program about an hour ago, is that the circumstances were so extraordinary, given what we know about Peter Mandelson, that Starmer should. So if you imagine that you were appointing somebody who had, I don't know what the worst thing you can do in the world of IT is, but who had shut down the Blackpool Illumination this time last year. And therefore you said, look, I just need to be sure that, you know, that he's changed, as it were, or that there's nothing in the... That's the only argument I've got against you.
Yeah, I suppose the only way a comparison I can make on that is that I've got a genius coder who's absolutely brilliant at his job, and get this particular aspect of the work completed with the maximum efficiency, and hopefully we'll get through it and it'll all be done without any issues. However, you know, so I employ him on the basis that he's absolutely brilliant. There's no one that can be comparable to him, and therefore, you know, I've taken that risk. But you have to take the risk assessment along with that. So presumably, if you're going into a gunfight with a knife, you wouldn't put a knife in a gunfight. You would put someone capable of doing the job. But at the same time, I do get the fact that it was a risk for Starmer to employ. And I'm no fan of Peter Manson. And at the time, I thought, what is he doing?
Yeah, funny, all my callers are saying that today. It's a bit, I mean, you know, I've got no reason to doubt you or Stuart or anybody else, but it's a little bit convenient that everyone except me, because I'm the one on the flipping radio who has to offer up an opinion about everything, could see the writing on the wall over Mandelson's appointment, and no one. But anyway, of course, we should have known. Even I should have known.
Yeah.
I should have seen it, even if I didn't. But my goodness me, though, it was rare, wasn't it? The voice of caution or the voice of criticism
at
the time.
But you have to say, was it a risk in putting Mandelson in place? And was he the best candidate to work alongside Trump? Now, initially, when you look at how he got on with Trump and everything else, it seems a brilliant position to appoint. And I was kind of coming around to the fact that, yeah, maybe he did the right thing. But there was a risk. It was a heavy risk, and as it turned out, the risk has come true.
So I've said that all the brilliant callers today have put forward really interesting arguments and insights without actually making it easy for me to guess which way they would go on the central question. I think you gave me a fairly broad hint earlier. You want him to stay, or at least you think he should stay.
I see. You know, in the way that things are going, turning out for the country and for the world, it'd be absolutely lunacy to call for Starmer to go, because we need stability in the country and we need strong leadership. Now, he might be the most boring PM and the most unlikable PM that we've got for a long time. But when you look at what happened previously with the previous government, I'd take Starmer every time.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And I don't share, I mean, I know you're probably describing other people's positions. I don't quite understand the unlikable element. I mean, I could see innocuous or boring. That's a fine.
Yeah.
But I don't, I mean, unlikable. It's a great mystery, even to people on the doorsteps, as to where this vicious personal animosity has come from. Although I'm afraid I think the answer probably is social media. And Liz in Brisbane picks up the point that Lawrence in Watford makes in this text. Thank you for your kind words about the show, Liz. But she goes on, but seriously, you Brits have finally got an intelligent, articulate, eminently useful Prime Minister, and you are spending an inordinate amount of time trying to undermine him by focusing on human factors that in the past created a situational challenge with the Mandelson appointment, when, for the sake of all of us, you should be focused on the extraordinary leadership Starmer is currently showing. And I think you both got powerful points, is the thing. It's 12:45.
Coming up at 1 on LBC, Sheila Fogarty.
A decision about who should do the single most important diplomatic job in the world was signed off by an unelected civil servant, not the Prime Minister. Who should lose their job, the civil servant or Keir Starmer?
Sheila Fogarty at 1. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
Buying a home on a holiday park was the retreat you always wanted. But then came unexpected site fee increases. And that was before the dramatic loss in value. If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, you may have been missold. HolidayParkAdviceCentre.co.uk could help you receive thousands in compensation. Text ASSIST to 78900. That's ASSIST to 78900.
Selling your car can be super simple if you choose We Buy Any Car, because they sort out any outstanding finance for you. Just bring along your final settlement agreement. If only they could make parallel parking simpler.
To the right a bit, mate. Yeah, back a bit more. Oh, no, too far.
We Buy Any Car, selling made simple. To sell your car today, enter your reg number now at webuyanycar.com.
Lidl, we're giving you 50% off a fruit or veg item on your next shop. Just scan the Lidl Plus app at checkout, and when you scan, you'll be in with a chance to win your whole shop back. Open Lidl Plus and start saving today. Lidl, more to value. 18 plus GB residents, various prices available, subject to availability, end 30/5/26. Full T's and C's apply. See lidl.co.uk/lp-terms.
Cancer doesn't care about childhood. It doesn't care what they miss out on or how much you want to protect them. But we do. At Great Ormond Street Hospital Charity, we fund life-saving research, vital family support, and the special things that help seriously ill kids be kids. Until no childhood is lost to cancer. Join us. Search GOSH Charity.
With an Amex business card, Selena's earning points renovating her skin clinic and refreshing the builders.
14 coffees and 28 sugars, please.
And on new adjustable chairs for every room. And she can use the points to lie back and relax.
Don't put ice cream on your brother's head.
Well, sometimes. And that's because with an Amex business card, your points can go towards holidays and more.
Search Amex business card. Interest, fees and terms apply. Available to UK limited companies and limited liability partnerships. Signatories must be a director or member of the business. Subject to approval.
This is LBC.
With Vauxhall. Proud partner of Team GB.
12:47 is the time. I'm going to give you two full disclosures. Hopefully I'll have time to take a few more calls as well. Incredible appetite to talk about this. Much greater appetite to talk about this than there was to talk about Mandelson's original sort of dismissal. I think because we're talking about the Prime Minister, aren't we? Rather than talking about the Ambassador. But I tell you what, I bet you 50p we'll be talking about it again on Monday, albeit from a slightly different angle. But I do want to draw your attention to two episodes of Full Disclosure. We got rather overtaken by events two Fridays ago, so I couldn't tell you about one of my favourite episodes ever. Genuinely. With Natalie Cassidy. Who you probably would know from EastEnders, where she played Sonia. But she's such a top person, actually. And such an enjoyable interviewee. Sometimes, and one of my colleagues commented on this, that I think it was Matthew, the lad who puts the YouTube episode together. Just, it was like, he said it's just like eavesdropping on people who are having a chat in the pub. And my body language, apparently, if you watch it on YouTube, is a bit different from how, I don't think I've ever felt so relaxed or so warm in an interview as I did with Natalie Cassidy. So I'll let you have a little taste of that first. And it includes a reference to June Brown, who played Dot Cotton in EastEnders. And I'm fascinated by the alchemy of fame. In the way that some famous people, even actors and actresses who aren't even being themselves, they're playing roles, but they somehow get to a place in your mind where you think that you know them. I realised when I met Natalie that she was in that constituency. She was in that category for me. I'd never met her before, but she came in and I thought I knew her. And somehow I thought I knew her, not the character that she used to play. And the same with June Brown, who played Dot Cotton. I was watching an old episode of Would I Lie to You the other day, and she was on that. And she was someone I wish I could have known. Anyway, this is Natalie Cassidy talking about the enormous privilege she had while on EastEnders of getting to know very, very well people like June Brown and some other stuff as well. If June Brown thinks this is worthy of her time and her energies and thinks you are worthy of her collaboration and her energies, and you're in a very special place.
It was very, very special. We'd sit together with a bottle of red wine, pyjamas on, crafting that script,
yeah,
talking about it, noting it, blocking it through together. And she just used to be... She said, every single line you say is a song. Every line you... Just remember, tonally, the way you breathe, you're making music. And she used to say, and listen, for God's sake, listen. It's half of acting. Reacting.
Yeah.
That's all you need to know.
It's your training, really.
Yeah, it was my training.
Anna Sher was a tiny kid, but then these people, June probably more
Wendy,
than anyone.
Barbara also.
Yeah.
Acting-wise, June was the lady that I aspired to be like and listen to the most.
Mm.
Barbara for etiquette, professionalism, being on time, knowing your stuff, talking to people. Wendy was... Being kind to the crew. Well, I've taken that as far as I could go. I'm marrying one, aren't I?
Boom, boom. And it gets better as well. It's just lovely. June Brown, Wendy Richard and Barbara Windsor, the sort of three guiding stars of Natalie Cassidy's career and personal development, because she was a baby when she started on EastEnders. That is one of my all-time favourites, which doesn't mean that the other one, the one that comes out this week, that came out two Fridays ago. We didn't put one out last week because I wasn't... Here, but this was extraordinary for a whole bunch of different reasons. I've always been an admirer from afar of Marcus Brigstocke, the comedian and actor and presenter. He's done all sorts of things, including a couple of jobs. I don't think I told him this about 20 years ago that I frankly thought I should have gone up for, in the presenting world, if not the stand-up comedy or the acting world. But I was only vaguely aware of the, the difficulties of his early years. You know, from the outside, a privileged education and upbringing, but from the inside, an absolutely torturous one. So I need to warn you, if you do download or listen to the entire episode, that it does include discussion of some very sensitive topics, including addiction, that some listeners may find distressing. So do take care while you're listening, and feel free to pause or step away if you need to. But this clip takes us to a point in Marcus Brigstocke's life where I think I can safely say, albeit that these battles are never over, they're always works in progress. You are always, as an addict, in recovery, as I understand it. This is certainly when things were getting much, much better for him.
The Ministry of Sound, when it first opened, had no liquor license, remember?
Yeah, I did.
And those were, that's really because everybody, bar me and my best pal who had heart condition, everyone else was on drugs, as far as I knew. But it was a particularly good place for me because no liquor license. I liked that. And also, I'd just lost 13 stone. So my body was this brand new thing. Brand new, and I'd never felt like that before, and I was 18, 19 years old, and so dancing felt, it didn't just feel like, oh, this feels good because I like this music. For me, it was a state of pure ecstasy, weirdly, and everyone else was like, yeah, with a couple of pills, I can get there. I was like, yes! From the moment I walked in, and eyes wide, like, I looked absolutely like I was off my nut, and I would dance and dance and dance with huge exuberance.
Wow.
I took up a lot of space, hence climbing up onto the podium, and I liked how showy offy that was, because I was not drunk and I was not high. I was not even particularly interested in meeting anybody. Right. I just liked moving, and being on a podium meant I could do it more. And then I got one of the dance crew at Ministry came up and said, do you want to be one of our dancers? And I was like, yeah, obviously, yes. Yeah, straight away, yes. So then I was that, and I danced there and Limelight and Equinox and a few other places.
Did you feel beautiful?
Did I feel beautiful? Yes, I think I... Did I? Yeah, I mean, I was still kind of, I had a really complicated relationship with my body, so I wouldn't go top off very much, not least because I had a lot of loose skin,
right,
you know. Yeah. I mean, I was lucky, I was young enough that there was some elasticity there. So I wouldn't go completely top off. But yes, I think I did feel beautiful. I certainly felt something I hadn't really felt before, which was a really pure state of joy.
It's again another absolute humdinger of an interview. And if that struck you as a slightly odd question to ask, I don't think I've ever asked any previous interviewees on Full Disclosure whether or not they felt beautiful, then I promise you it will make perfect sense in the context of the broader conversation. So Natalie Cassidy and Marcus Brigstocke, highly, highly recommended episodes. And that brings us back to today and the conversation about Keir Starmer, his will he, won't he, will he, won't he, will he join the dance scenario, which probably won't be answered until Monday, although this is one of those political situations where you can't say anything for certain, I don't think. It may be that the weekend sees an even bigger development. Personally, I doubt it, but I wouldn't rule it out. Last word probably on this goes to Chris, who's in Leeds. Chris, what would you like to say?
Hi, James.
Hello.
I'm in my early 30s. I've voted, I could vote since 2010, and I'm just in complete despair, to be honest, at the state of our politics. I grew up, obviously, the social media era, and the amount of vile venom that is aimed towards our leaders, it's just so depressing. You know, I'm no political expert, but I'm so concerned about the future of our country. And, you know, we've got a prime minister here who, he might be boring, he might be dull as dishwater, but in my mind, he's the first prime minister we've had for quite a while with some common sense, common sense between his ears. And I just don't know. We've got so much more in the world to be worried about.
Do you know the word? I haven't. I think I may have used it a couple of hours ago, but I thought we'd use it more today, and we haven't. Which was chaos. and that we've had chaos in this country. Chaos has become normalised, political chaos. I mean, my job is such, Chris, that I kind of sometimes I used to welcome it because it's very good for business. Chaos, political chaos. It's great for business. Keir Starmer was to both endorse and challenge your position. He was supposed to end the chaos. And it is his fault that we are now on the brink of more chaos. So I don't know whether he gets off the hook under your reading because we don't want more chaos if he is responsible for creating the imminent chaos. Do you see what I mean? Can he be responsible for it and also use it as a reason why we should let him off?
I agree. And I think so many people in my age.
It's all you've ever known as a voter is chaos.
Exactly. I mean, I was living in the age where we had a health secretary, and I'm not exaggerating, responsible for hundreds of thousands of deaths, and we pay him £1 million to go and sit in the bloody jungle. I cannot get my head round it. And I'm just in a complete loss as to where we go from.
So leave him be.
In my humble opinion, yes, because he's better than the alternatives out there.
And the alternatives include chaos. Well, we shall see in the course of the next few days whether or not that position prevails. But I think you've articulated it quite beautifully. Thank you. In fact, thank you everybody today. Really good calls. Exceptional, actually. I know I say that a lot, but only because it's true. I've learnt quite a lot. I don't think I've moved position. I don't. 50-50 now, maybe? But that would be an appallingly non-committal perspective, wouldn't it? If you missed any of today's show, you can listen back on our free Global Player app or the LBC app, where you can stay up to date with all the latest news, videos and opinions. You can listen to a range of podcasts, including James O'Brien Daily, the best bits from this show every day, and, of course, Full Disclosure, which is, as I've suggested to you, going through quite a rich seam at the moment of guests. You can listen to a range of podcasts, including, I've just said that, download the official LBC app for free. From your app store now, coming up at 4 on LBC, it's Tom Sawbrick, but now it's time for Sheila Fogarty.
And for the record, I've always thought Marcus Brigstocke is beautiful.
Have you really?
Yeah.
Lovely man.
Yeah, he's a very
handsome man.
And now
I know why.
You can pass that on if you ever see him again.
I will, if I do.
Thank you, James. At 3 today, the Prime Minister and President Macron hold a joint press conference on the Iran war and the Strait of Hormuz a little later. Is Keir Starmer's popular foreign policy position on that war making him safer at the moment from you-know-what? And we're going to talk about you-know-what. Two, I want to know whether you think he's a passenger or a driver in number 10. But we start with that decision about who should do the single most important diplomatic job in the world. Turns out it was effectively signed off by an unelected civil servant, Ollie Robbins, not the Prime Minister. So who should lose their job? The civil servant or Keir Starmer? I'm going to argue possibly both.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 1 o'clock, the Prime Minister says it's unforgivable that he wasn't told that Lord Mandelson had failed his security vetting. The peer was denied clearance early last year, but the Foreign Office overruled it so he could take the job of ambassador to the US. Downing Street insists Sir Keir Starmer was only made aware of this on Tuesday. The PM says he's furious.
I was not told that he had failed security vetting. No minister was told that he'd failed security vetting. Number 10 wasn't told that he'd failed security vetting. That is completely unacceptable.
He says he'll set out all the relevant facts to Parliament on Monday. The civil servant in charge of the Foreign Office, Sir Ollie Robbins, has now left his post. Most opposition leaders are calling for Sir Keir to resign. Politics professor Tony Travers has told LBC several questions remain for him.
The idea that the Foreign Office withheld from not only the Prime Minister, but other cabinet ministers, this vital piece of information, you know, that is going to take a great deal of research and unravelling in the days ahead. But this was not mentioned when there was an opportunity to at Prime Minister's question time, or presumably the Prime Minister could have come to the House separately after Tuesday. I mean, that will get a lot of attention.
Sir Keir Starmer's in Paris, where the UK and France are holding joint talks on the future of the Strait of Hormuz. They'll focus on how the key waterway can be kept open after the Iran war ends. The Mayor of London's told LBC Kensington Gardens is the latest target for bad people, as the park's been sealed off for a security alert. Police in protective clothing are examining several items left near the Israeli embassy, but we're told there's no threat to the wider public. Mayor Sadiq Khan says this follows arson attacks on the Jewish community and a Persian language media company.
We know there are people trying to scaremonger. We know one of the tactics of bad people and terrorists is to make us cower. For obvious reasons, we're encouraging people to avoid that part of London because the police are working incredibly hard to get to the bottom of this.
And thousands of teenagers in Weymouth are being offered the meningitis B vaccine. It's after three confirmed cases in two local schools. Dorset Council says it looks like the bacterium responsible is being transmitted widely among young people. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down 25 points at 10,564. The pound buys $1.35 and €1.15. LBC weather, showers all day for Scotland and Northern Ireland. A band of rain moving east across Wales and England with sunshine either side. The southeast staying dry, highs of 18. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Matt Hewitt.
Next.
Hi, just these, thanks. Do you do cashback?
Just need to check you're not a robot first. New security policy.
Okay.
How many traffic lights can you see out the window?
Oh, two?
No, that's wrong.
Right, well, obviously I'm not a robot.
That's what a robot would say.
What a load of malarkey. Smarty keeps things simple, like 80 gigabytes for £10. And on a rolling monthly SIM plan, you're free to leave any time. Less malarkey, more Smarty. Search Smarty Mobile.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Sheila Fogarty.
Hello there, good afternoon to you. We will be hearing live from Keir Starmer later on this afternoon, just after three, there or thereabouts. These things are always changeable. He's in Paris at a summit, just looking at images of him now being greeted by Emmanuel Macron at the Elysee Palace. They will give a joint press conference a little later on, and we'll go live to that. Perhaps, I mean, the stuff they're talking about the Strait of Hormuz is very important for us, and the war in Iran and how that will affect our economy. But equally, I wonder whether he'll be asked questions too about the situation he finds himself in after that Guardian report overnight about him not being told by senior civil servants that Peter Mandelson had not passed his security vetting but went on to be appointed to one of the most important jobs, arguably in diplomacy anyway, in the world. Let's get a sense of where we're up to and whether you think Keir Starmer should resign. My strong view is that he should, I'm afraid. And I say I'm afraid because we don't need this instability in our country, if that's what it comes to. We don't need it at all. But I'll tell you my reasons. I'll share my reasons with you shortly as to why I think this is a resigning matter. Before that, though, Natasha Clark joins me, LBC's political editor. I think, Natasha, it's probably important to start at the vetting process because, you know, we talk about this kind of thing a bit more than your average person, but I had to really dig down into it last night and this morning to get my head around what that process involves. So talk to us about that.
It's really, really complicated. And I've just been reading, which James has been referring to on his show, the transcripts of Ollie Robbins when he was appearing before Parliament's Foreign Affairs Committee, when he was asked all about the appointment of Peter Mandelson and how it can be that somebody is appointed, essentially, and then has the vetting afterwards, yes. Which is what's happened in this place. And actually, Ollie Robbins and Chris Wormald, who were both giving evidence there, said actually, well, usually the people that are being appointed to these very top positions are usually civil servants anyway. So they've usually already got the vetting. They've already got clearance. So what happened in this case was that the Prime Minister, and we know this because the Mandelson files that were released a couple of months ago, a month ago now, yeah. That they said and they proved that Keir Starmer basically had an initial one page of information, of advice. It's an initial, basically, Google search of whatever they can
stuff
find.
Stuff that we knew.
Stuff that we knew.
The friendship had been ongoing.
About
the
Lord Mandelson.
Not so much.
About Jeffrey Epstein, about those links, about the fact that he had worked with specific clients that could potentially pose conflicts of interest. And, of course, the fact that he had been let go from government several times already. And all of that, which you'd expect to be already information that was in the public domain. It also, crucially, had that link, the Financial Times reporting that Peter Mandelson had stayed at Jeffrey Epstein's house after he'd been convicted. So the Prime Minister was aware of this when he decided to appoint him. So that was part of what's been called the sort of initial cabinet office vetting process. Then, when the Prime Minister decided to appoint him, the process continued. There's a, essentially an arm of the Cabinet Office. It's called the UK Security Vetting. And they went on to do what is called developed vetting. So it's a very thorough process. And if you've spoken to anybody who's gone through it, it is hours of interviews where they ask you all sorts of personal questions about your relationships, your intimate relationships,
banking
whether you've had any, you know, debts rack up, connections to anyone who might be dodgy. Parking fines, all of this
stuff. We're told it is incredibly granular.
It is. And I've spoken to friends of mine who've had it for their jobs in government, and they, some of them have said, you know, I think I was asked completely crazy questions. But it's also that they can know and the government can be confident that you're not going to be in any way open to blackmail or sort of, you know, at risk of any sort of state secrets being leaked because they've got something on you.
Yeah, and at what point does the Cabinet Office, so that's number 10, responsibility, at what point does it pass from Cabinet Office responsibility to, we learn, the discretion of the Foreign Office, a different department led by, not the Prime Minister, but the Foreign Secretary at the time, David Lammy?
So all of this developed vetting is done by the UK Security Vetting as an organisation. It's then passed on to the Foreign Office. So they're the department that sponsors the entire process for this job for Lord Mandelson, because he is going to be part of the Foreign Office, because he's our ambassador to the US. So he commissions the Ollie Robbins and all of his team commission this work to the UK Security Vetting. It then comes back to the Foreign Office, and we now have learnt as a result of that Guardian story yesterday.
And to be sorry, just to, so that people really understand, UK Security Vetting, independent body.
Independent, yes. Yeah. So they give that information to the Foreign Office, and they say to the Foreign Office, as we learnt yesterday from that Guardian report, that they do not recommend that Lord Mandelson gets developed vetting. They don't tell us why.
He
gets that clearance. They don't tell us why. We don't find out why. And we don't know who in the Foreign Office would have seen, if any of them had have seen, because obviously it's a very confidential process. You don't want somebody basically saying to all of these civil servants, oh, you know, Peter Mandelson, he's got these relationships with X and Y and Z. It has to be kept confidential.
Yes, it's clear that for a person's privacy in law, it can only be very minimally shared.
Yes, I imagine that's probably the case. Mm. But it's the decision then of the Foreign Office what they do then. So obviously we now know that that was overturned. And I didn't know this was even possible. And apparently the Prime Minister didn't either know that it was possible for the Foreign Office and for some organisations, of which I don't know which organisations I've asked.